Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Family, we're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda. And that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agriculture systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe, and this evening we will be dealing with what is law and what is not, handling yourself in the courtroom. Now, before we get started, I have an announcement to make. The Summit of the Moors will be on January 10th, start January 10th, but I was notified today that we are looking for vendors. If you are a vendor, you want to come down for this event, you have to go over to www.summitofthemoors.com. There's a one-time donation of $50 that gives you admittance as a vendor at this event. So you might want to get over there and do that if you plan on coming down here to Florida for the event and you are a vendor. This is an opportunity for you to bring your wares and present your wares so that you can make some money. Okay? That's on January the 10th, from 6 to 9. And you have to go over there to register at summitofthemoors.com. Okay? And you'll see a number over there to dial. If you got any questions about that, contact Brother Diallo Sakura. And he will answer all your questions involving that that situation there. I'll be there as well. Look forward to meeting you all. Now, tonight, I hope you got your paper and pencil handy because we're going to give you some information and some things to do. I was studying some stuff today, and the gentleman, he was making a lot of sense and putting down some stuff that worked pretty good when he got in that courthouse. And is very interesting. I want you to pay very close attention to what these guys are saying and describing what they're talking about and how the techniques that they use were successful, okay? And this is some of the same stuff that we may want to incorporate. Now, we got quite a bit of information to deliver you to you today, and we got a lot of new people that are on here this evening that may not have come in contact with this kind of information before. And even though I have run this before, there's one segment that I have run before, but I'm going to run it again so that you can get it right. And you can actually use this stuff. And once you get it down, of course, this information is inside of Talking Archives. For those of you who have my master library already, this information is already in there. But for those of you who don't, you need to get over to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You get over there, give me a call, area code 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will find out where you are, and so that we can get a chance to help you out with what you got going. Also, tomorrow night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll be hosting our free wealth building class. Make sure you're there. The number to dial is 712-432-3100. That's 712-3100. For those of you who have businesses, online businesses or what have you, you need to be there so you can get these nuts and bolts and wiggle pins to help you all make some money with what you got going. The access code is 865-074, 865-074. That's every Wednesday night starting at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just dial, pick up your phone and dial in there. And it may be a good idea to have your paper and pencil handy and have your computer up. Now, tonight we're going to be dealing with how do you lock up the court and how do you set it free? How do you get your case dismissed? What do you say in a courtroom to a judge? What do you do with the prosecutor? These are the things that we're going to cover and much more here this evening. So you all hold your hat. Keep in mind, after the first hour, I'm going to open up the line so that you all can get in if you got questions, comments, if you got problems with your mortgage, if you got problems with student loans, what have you. Go ahead and follow the props on your phone. Raise your hand. We'll recognize it. We'll open up the line and find out what's on your mind. Okay? Now, one thing I want to say about being inside that courtroom, when you're there, what makes you successful, in my opinion, is going in there armed. And when I say armed, I'm not talking about carrying any weapons in the building now. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about knowing what you are doing and having the necessary documents already put in place and having copies of what you need there with you and being able to handle yourself and enforce your position based on what you know, because you've studied this information and you're able to use it successfully. So it's all about confidence, and confidence comes about by study. When you know what you're doing, you can do this thing inside out. It rolls off your lips like water off the back of a duck. You're good to go. You ain't in there all scared and stuff, and you know when someone is violating you, and you already have measures in place whereby if they do, they cannot violate you without severe consequences on themselves. And this is why it is so important. I always encourage brothers and sisters to do the administrative process. Go get your stuff already lined up and get your will on file, get your trust set up, all that, get you moving to your secure party position. So when you go in there already ready, you see. But this is some of the stuff that we're going to deal with here this evening, and we're going to start to get some clarity on this thing about the secured party, the secured party creditor. We hear a lot of people talk about that, and we want to find out and get some clarity on what it's all about. I mean, that makes sense to me. Okay? So we'll start there, and after that, then we'll go down into dealing with this courtroom situation. So y'all hold on.
First topic of the night is, of course, being the person. So we have the concept of the secured party creditor. Well, We want to go through, of course, secured party. We want to go through creditor. Now, we've found in Black's Law and different areas, we've found secured creditor. We've found secured party, but nowhere can we find a definition for the term secured party creditor. In my eyes, I believe that it's something that's been kind of coined during the movement to help facilitate and personify some of the actions that are taking place so that one would be able to relate a little better. And I think a lot of the concepts and spiritual context that Brandon has brought to the table, though it's very grounding and very foundational, individuals can tend to run with it in a different way. And some people will take paperwork that has been, you know, clearly documented as sample work with, you know, with clear mistakes in it, and take it on as their own, and use it as if it were, you know, paralegal documentation or something of full substance without fully understanding it. The secured party creditor, I think, is one of those terms that were kind of coined and kind of ran off in that sense, where it was shown in documents and it was being shown to kind of use it. Or kind of being used to show a theory, and I think people kind of took it on as their own. In terms of speaking with law enforcement, you'll hear you know, Gordon Hall say things like that. I'm the priority security interest holder in the estate known as, and all of those things can be real. But there's, you know, there's the issue that Gordon and his friends always run into, which is the judge is always standing there looking at the individual saying, I'm here, I'm not the name, I'm here for the name. And you're immediately placed into a conundrum where you have to literally spend more energy attempting to identify the parties in the contract than you would ever have to you know, actually take care of the issue. If you were to get past that issue, it could probably be much smoother, you know. So that's kind of the concept basis that we want to present tonight is, you know, what if there was a legitimate individual representing your will and testament on behalf of the living man, so that the living man does not have to be confused with the taxpayer that is actually being charged?
There's a lot that goes around the secured party creditor. The concept, that is. So if we're talking about this conceptually and not just the definition of secured party creditor, let's put it in a little bit of context. I think most people, most members of G10 know this history I'm about to talk about, but maybe not everybody. There was a movement kind of, you know, back a couple of decades ago called the Patriot Movement, and it was you know, people who were studying hard and learning concepts and finding that that they had rights that had been potentially buried, or that they had, you know, agreed to sign away. And, you know, at times they were called constitutionalists. They went back to the founding documents. And they tried to stand on the Constitution, and it didn't work out all that well. I mean, we owe a debt of gratitude to these people, these pioneers of this information, because they opened the doors of perception to a lot of people. But a lot of them wound up in jail for tax evasion and things like that. Following on that, there was sort of a sovereignty movement, and the sovereigns, you know, realized that there's nothing between them and God, and the federal government included, and the sovereigns sort of were a softer version of the Patriot Movement, I guess, sort of studying just as hard and taking a slightly different approach. And with the advent of some new minds and new ideas in it, the whole thing sort of came into the creditor movement. And I don't know who first coined that phrase, but I first heard it from Brandon Adams. I don't know if he invented it or what, but creditors in commerce, he, you know, made a point of defining what he means by creditor. and you know, pointing out that we're led to believe that we're the debtors, or our persons, our ends, ledges, trust, estates are the debtors in the system, and the banks are the creditors. And sort of the focus of this movement was to put a spiritual understanding into it, that we are the creators, okay? We are the creditors. We are the it is the individuals through their persons that can create money into the system. For example, it is the individuals through their intentions and thoughts and observations that turn any sort of energy in this material realm from primordial energy into matter, space, time, into the experience that we have and we get in this material realm exactly what we intend as a group, okay? So there's a lot that goes around this word creditor. It comes from creator, and it has been recaptured through the studies of people for decades here. It has been recaptured as and redefined in addition to, you know, just the fundamental definition of it that you know might appear on a UCC-1 financing statement, and how you would use it there. Okay, so it's a loaded word, and there are myths that go with that. There, you know, are creditor myths that people believe things that aren't true. There are people that don't understand where the truth is, and you know, it's a complex issue around this word. And secured party creditor, I think, complicates it even more, because, like PJ said, you can't look up secured party creditor anywhere that I know of. You can look up secured party, you can look up creditor or secured creditor, but I don't know where you find a definition for secured party creditor.
And so I believe someone asked a question: how does one become a secured party creditor?
And that's exactly what I'm talking about.
This is a really simple understanding. If one loans money to someone and deems themselves insecure and wishes to have collateral to ensure payment and performance of that debt that's been incurred, they become a secured party and they become a creditor in the same light. Question answered.
Right. Creditor or a secured party, which is essentially the same thing, or very, very similar in definitions, they mean that there is an obligation for which, in the case of a secured party at least, there's collateral, or there's a right to collect, or both. Simple as that. The other many uses of the word, I think, you know, have maybe a time and a place, but this call probably isn't the time and the place. This webinar probably isn't the time and the place. This is truly talking about the secured party in an agreement listed as public notice on a UCC-1 financing statement. We're talking about someone who's actually owed something.
That's correct. So, let's move on to the next slide here for a moment. The myth of distinguishing the living man from the person with a UCC financing statement.
Well, yeah, couldn't have walked into that one any better than everything I just rambled about, right? I mean,
right.
I didn't even realize that was the next thing that was popping up here.
no worries.
Yeah, you want to take that?
I can start it off, but I'm sure you're going to put your own spin on it too.
Most likely.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about the secured party creditor, right? So we're talking about
leaning the debtor for a debt owed. Well, you know, in that creditor movement, there was the theory that since the living man is not the person, and the living man creates the energy, then there is a transmittal or a transfer of energy that can be documented, valued, and assessed, and can be accounted for from the living man to the person. And when going to yourself, well, if I've never been the person, well, you know, I've been giving the person, the living man, stuff all my life, and you know, he owes me his life. That person owes me his life. So then the idea comes to say, well, since there's been, you know, since there's a debt, well, we're gonna put a value on what I believe is, you know, we'll say 30 years of the person's life benefiting from the energy of the living man, and I'm gonna put a lien against that in the name of the living man as the secured party and the person as the debtor. Now, there's an issue with that. The issue is that no living man, that is when we refer to each other spiritually as I am, or you know, that which with the fount of honor, right? You guys can look that up. So, you know, we look at ourselves as this being. That being cannot exist in commerce. The only thing that exists in commerce are fictions, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. And those fictions are able to then sue, be sued, and do any kind of business with each other that they choose. So wouldn't it be logical to represent the living man's will and testament in a legitimate special purpose vehicle or organization that can respectively carry out and execute the duties of the living man in commerce as a fiction? Because the living man is just going to cause you problems when you go in and I'm not the person, I am, that is PJ, and I'm the priority security interest holder because I have a security agreement with the straw man and the living man that states that it owes me, let's say, $300 billion. So you could see where a judge would just look at you and go, are you even fit to be here? How about a competency hearing? Like, a competency hearing might be really good for you right now. Or maybe I'm going to assign you an attorney because I don't think you read the local rules of court. I don't think you read the state rules of court. I don't think you know what kind of venue you've entered into and what you're doing here. So I'm going to look out for your best public interest, and I'm going to assign you what I think is best for you. And that's what judges will always do, because the living man that's walking in, they look dual-minded. They claim they're not the person that they're there to represent, but there's no distinguishing factor to prove it. And they may be Gordon Hall himself, the best person, but I guarantee you Gordon Hall gets some freaking flack for it. And he may be able to pull it off every time. But is he every other person? And is every other person going to be as distinguished or as eloquent or as well endowed with knowledge as Gordon Hall is? Well, we hope to all get to that point. But in the moment of practice, isn't there a step that seems more logical that could make this a more legitimate transfer of estate property? And so, you know, Weiss touches on that in Trustees in Commerce. He talks about the sovereign, he talks about the trustee and how the trustee can operate. And it's very clear and simple. You can appear, you can appear as the trustee for the trust that holds a priority security interest in the debtor. And the debtor never has to appear. Now, would it be, you know, it would be probably a little easier to have a second trustee appear for you, which is why we chose to place this in effect. We chose to execute this webinar series so that people can learn to truly trust each other, so that when it's time to go to court and there's a charge that's been offered here, a trustee can walk in, place a notice of interest stating, hey, I have a priority security interest in this. I've not been noticed of this case. I want to have this case dismissed because I have a first-in-time, first-in-line lien against this person, this real person that you are charging. And I'm a real, separate, special-purpose vehicle with real interest that has been filed and published and noticed in the public.
That's great. You know, I've whether it's the UCC-1 filing or a court appearance, these are both times when you want public notice taken of the relationship between the person, and it's not actually the living man. It's actually the upper and lower case name, which is a private trust.
Okay. Well, for the sake of my conversation, if you could place the uppercase as the taxpayer or the person, and the lowercase as the living man, I'm using those personifications to speak clearly. That way, we understand, you know. Because once again, like you say, a lot of these words get taken out of context, and people could think that that's exactly what I mean. That it's, you know, that's the living man, and I'm just using it as a personification to explain I am. You know, so please, I'm sorry.
I understand. Now, what I'm going to do is talk about what it really is, and the reason for that is that it's the same thing that we're doing with the trust, okay? There's a public trust that's being leaned by a private trust, okay? That's what's going on when the living man leans his person, okay? And I'm not going to say whether that works or not, because there's evidence on both sides. I've seen it work, and I've seen it not work. Okay, there are mortgage cases that are held up when someone leans his person and it goes to court because the bank can't sell the house because the house is listed as collateral. Okay, and then there are mortgage cases where someone leans his person and it makes no difference. They steamroll right past it. Nobody notices. Nobody cares. Okay, so I've seen evidence on both sides of whether that works, and the same in court. I've personally gone into court many times differentiating myself from the person, and I've seen it work one day and get thrown out the next appearance, and then work the next time I'm in on the same case. When I say thrown out, I mean the concept, not the case. It's a very, very tricky thing to do, and as Weiss says, it makes you look a little crazy, and it puts you in a position of potentially having to argue your position, because the judge might think either you're crazy, or he doesn't know what you're talking about, or he's going to test you to the max to see if you do know how to hold your mud in the stance that you're taking, which is a very, very difficult one to stand on for the simple reason that the names are the same. Okay, you can differentiate them as much as possible. I'm John Adams of the Doe family. Okay? Well, are you John Doe? Well, Your Honor, you may call me John Adams. What's your last name? I don't have a last name. I have a family name. It's Doe. You know, I mean, but it's a very tricky thing to walk around, and it's just, it makes you look a little crazy. It makes it too easy for the court to make you look crazy and to just dismiss you, and there's no need for it. When you know it should be legitimate, in my opinion, it should be legitimate to lean your person or to differentiate yourself from the person, both on a UCC-1 and in court, because it's a public trust leaned by a private trust, and it should be doable. But if that private trust had a different name and trustee, you'd be in way better shape. Like, there just wouldn't be any question. All this, what is your name, who are you, all of this wouldn't be going on in court. Or, you know, in the case of the UCC, it couldn't be just dismissed out of hand because it's the same name.
Yeah, it would be, you know, Jerry Beheimer, trustee of ABC Trust, priority security interest holder, noticing the court or petitioning the court, you know, in some form or manner, and they'd have to hear that because it's a third party intervener. It's an interested party.
It is the interested party.
Yeah, it's a real party in interest is what it is, and they have proof that they're a real party in interest by way of their public financing statement against whatever property or chattel is being encumbered at this moment, and they have a right to ask that to not happen.
Right.
Similar to how a second lien on a home cannot be collected until the first one is. Very simple. And to add to what you were saying a little bit earlier, you know, in some of the failings, a lot of the failings has nothing to do with the trust, but rather sometimes how the property was transferred. Sometimes property was transferred accordingly, sometimes it wasn't. Oftentimes in the mortgage industry, people get a little, or in the mortgage issues, they get a little desperate, and one would fraudulently transfer a property thinking that it would that it was free and clear and that the lien was gone, transferring it then to a trust, and that trust then, you know, being called into question for what's been a fraudulent transfer, a fraudulent acceptance to the trust. So, you know, that's when all of a sudden now the private trust fails, everything fails because it's all been called into the jurisdiction, all because there was a previous lien or previous contract that was involved that didn't handle things. And those are just simple ways that these things falter, which is why we, you know, brought up in our first few webinars, you know, Fraudulent Transfers Act, perpetuities, the things that you could easily loophole yourself in just because it wasn't pointed out to you.
There's one other trap that goes with this as well, in trying to distinguish the living man from the person. And this is, again, a court example, not UCC, but they kind of go hand in hand. If you're trying to operate that way, then it's on your paperwork and it gets tested in court. Okay, and if you get to court with it, the problem comes about when you, the living man, distinguish yourself from the person. Then what is your relationship to that person? And it's easy to overlook the debtor-creditor relationship because it's the same name, so at best the judge might accept that you are agent for, which he'll try to turn into trustee for that public trust, that public person. And as soon as you become in his eyes the trustee for that public person, then you're doomed, because guess who pays the bills, pays the debts in the trust relationship? The trustee. Trustee always pays the bills. So if the judge believes that you, okay, fine, he accepts that you're not the person, okay, that's a public trust, it's an ens legis, and you're there on behalf of that. Okay, great. So you're the trustee then of that public trust. If you agree, then he says, okay, great. Then here, pay the prosecutor.
When you have, you know, what the trust, and I think I'm starting this wrong, when that circumstance is happening, and by the way, I know the question is going to come up, you know, when would we ever be in court? Well, you know, often we're offered charges all the time. We're offered all sorts of fun offers to go to court. And so you never know where you're going to be or what's going to happen. But if the property that's being encumbered or is accepting a charge or is attempting to accept a charge has been encumbered, then it is the responsibility of the secured party to protect the interest from being encumbered. And that would fall on the trustee of the private trust having a lien against the person to step up and place in a notice of interest and an entry of motion to dismiss based on grounds of lack of personal jurisdiction or grounds that they have no higher case and that there's nobody there to rebut their claim that they have a higher case and that it must be dismissed. And that gets back to what Winston used to say when you'd walk in and say, he would say things like, I'm the super plaintiff, or I'm here with a priority claim, the highest claim in this court. Can anybody rebut my claim and have this dismissed? Now, once again, we're falling into the same hole. If it's the person, the judge is just going to keep you there and nothing's going to happen. Christian, you've walked out of court, haven't you? after you stated your claim.
Oh,
and
yes, I have.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe you can tell a little about that, you know, just to explain that, you know, these things happen. They just sometimes the judge is like, what was that? I don't care. I call the shots here.
Yeah, I've definitely had a judge just yelling at me. I mean, just irate, just going. I mean, his blood was boiling, and you know, he's like, "Who are you? I need a name."
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, one thing I found out about dealing with the courts and stuff, these courts are pretty much, in my opinion, based on, I guess, just based on what I know about the entire system, they're pretty much the same as the mafia. Mafia come to you and say, well, you know, you got a business. Hey, I need you to give me at least 80% of the money you're making in here, and we're going to protect you. And if you don't give us the money, then Benny over here with the baseball bat's going to break your legs and bust out your store windows. You say, okay, well, I'm going to give you the money. Okay, then the IRS come along and say, well, we have discovered that you owe us $25,000 in back taxes after we looked through our books and stuff. And you can't, in your mind, you can't even fathom or nothing like that. But you ask them, well, could you, how did you come up? Well, we came up with it because we said so. And it's just as simple as that. So, you know, you have to deal with these people in a way where you don't get upset and raise no thing. You can't lose your cool. Up enough. For instance, to give you a scenario, you have a traffic cop who's violated you, and so it's time to go to court. You represent yourself, and you would like to call him as a witness. And you, but before you do that, you ask the judge if it's all right with the court. I'd like to ask you a question before I get started. Can I get a fair trial here? And, of course, you say, of course you are. You're going to get a fair trial. If there's a conflict of interest, can I get a fair trial? Well, if there's a conflict of interest, you won't be able to get a fair trial, but there is no conflict of interest. Well, a judge, if it pleases the court, and this is for the record, could you tell me who you represent here today? Well, I'm representing the state of Wisconsin. I'm representing the state of New York. Okay. Well, Judge, I think maybe I don't understand, and this is for the record, but the prosecutor here is definitely representing the state of New York or Wisconsin. And if you're representing the state of New York or Wisconsin, that seems to be a conflict of interest. It's at that point that you can be quiet now because somebody's going to blow their stack because you done tricked them into on the record to acknowledging the fact that there's definitely a conflict of interest. You can't get a fair trial because the judge and the prosecutor, being both members of the bar, which is a foreign British corporation, is now officially fighting against you. So he's going to hit the ceiling. I move that this case be dismissed on the words that have just come out of your mouth on the record, that I couldn't get a fair trial if there was a conflict of interest. And you just told us that it was because you told us that you and the prosecutor is both representing the state of Wisconsin or New York City. So you don't have to get upset. You got a cop on the stand. You ask him, sir, did you make a, was this a legitimate citation that you wrote? Yes, it was. Well, sir, could you give me components of what a legitimate citation is, sir? Is at that time that his lawyers are going to hit the ceiling. Objection, Your Honor, the witness is incompetent to answer that question. This is not, he's not prepared to do this. And so you don't ever want to get upset. See, once you learn, you can pretty much just pick them apart. We got somebody with a hand raised. Erico 540, could you tell me who you are, where you calling from, what's your question or comment, brother?
540 is me. Good evening, all. Brother Haka, this is La. I had a question. I got a situation just like that, and pretty much stipulated that I ran a red light, driving on suspended, and they charged me with 60 days jail time as well as $450 fine. Well, the jail time was canceled out, but now I have to go back to court January 6th to let them know whether or not I'm going to pay them that fine. And I want to know, on those same grounds, can I use the same verbiage that you used, Brother Tahaka, on that same charge? Because I know that a crime is only committed if there's an injured party involved, and there was an injured party involved.
Okay, well let's go back within time. Let's move back to the scene of the crime.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go. Okay, first thing that we got to understand is last week we dealt with words and terminology of words in the last broadcast. And we've gotten away from officer. We're talking about policeman, a private contractor. We've substituted the word arrest for abduction. We've substituted the word inmate for hostage, and so on and so forth. Because this is exactly what's going on inside the United States. And you don't look at a lion and call him a rabbit. You look at a rabbit and call a rabbit, and you look at a lion and call a lion a lion. But what they have got us doing is looking at the lion and calling him a rabbit. So the first thing happened, you was on the road and you were traveling. What were you traveling in?
I'm sorry, say it again, sir.
What kind of vehicle were you in when they stopped?
I was traveling in a GMC Yukon.
And this is a your work vehicle? You drive for a company?
No, it's my own personal vehicle.
And what time of day was it?
This was about 3 p.m.
3 p.m.
I was heading home.
Okay. And he asked you for a driver's license.
Yes, sir, he did.
Did he cut his lights on?
Yes, sir, he did.
Okay. And you pulled over, and he asked you for the driver's license, and you gave him a driver's license?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, what has happened is you have allowed him to occupy your office of estate because he asked you for the property of somebody else. If you had read the bracket of the driver's license, it clearly tells you that a driver's license is property of the state. The vehicle that you are driving, if you have not paid off that vehicle and went to the DMV and got it deregistered, it is property of the state. If you had a license plate on the back of that vehicle, it is property of the state. So in this particular scenario, they're winning. However, what you could have did is if you had some finesse, you could have taken the ticket and abided by the three-day rule, turn it sideways, mark right on it, refuse the contract, no contract. But still, you're going to have to explain how it was that you gave this guy property belonging to the state when he asked you for it, which clearly have you listed as a fiction, anything other than a living man, because it's all on all capital letters. The property belongs to somebody else. You also signed it on the back. And so tell me what happened next.
Okay, from that point on, as I began to explain that I have documentation stating that I am rested to drive and that I am owner of this vehicle, they didn't want to hear me. They did take my portfolio and kept it and then proceeded to arrest me and impound my vehicle. And I stayed in jail for like 8 hours until I was bonded out.
Okay, well, you put all the – if you had a pocket full of gold – and they didn't have any. What you pretty much did was take all the gold out of your pocket and put it in their pocket.
Mm.
That's what happened. See, you got a right to travel. And speeding also is not a ticketable or an arrestable offense. But if you're going to exercise your freedom of right to travel, the first thing you're going to need is you're going to need it in your brain.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you want to look at the Transportation Act, what is the difference between driver and traveler, defined driver and traveler. Once you get this information down in your brain, now you're officially ready to start dealing with documentation. But the first thing you want to do is you want to learn what's already been ruled upon by the highest courts of land, which is a whole another different crooked ball of wax, but we ain't going to deal with that right now. But anyway, you want to be able to have this information and lined up in these cases where you can not argue the cases, but have them explain how these people have lied. I need you to tell me how this particular Supreme Court justice lied here when they have said the same thing and ruled the same way over and over and over involving the same situation, that I have a right to travel. The vehicle that I was traveling in does not fit the specification of a driving vehicle. You cannot supply me with any information on the person that's a company that's paying me to drive. You have not provided me any identification. You arrested me about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You took me down to the police station. You had a weapon on your side. You did not take me to a magistrate's office so that I could plead my case. You took me straight to jail, which now we have not only abduction, but we have aggravated kidnapping because we have a weapon on our side, and everybody that touches you in the jail from them is now officially liable to lawsuit, including their wives. Now, when you're exercising your freedom of right to travel, once again, you want to do that first in your brain. You want to know beyond any shadow of a doubt what you got the right to do and who you are versus who they're trying to get you to be.
Correct.
Okay. And any documentation that you present them with, you're able to defend. Now, if they're going to just outright break those laws, you're going to have to, what I always tell people to do, if you're going to do this thing, you want to make sure you do it right. And remember the rules of the game. No evidence, no case. So what I would recommend that people do that's going to do this is go to the little spy shop, get your video cameras, little small, tiny cameras that you can have mounted inside the door of your vehicle, your dash cam, in the back, the dash cam on the front. You might want to hang a little camera. And these are audio and video cameras that you can take and plug in the small USB port into these little things and plug them into your computer and upload this video and audio and then download it on a DVD disc. So now we're officially ready to, now that we have the evidence, we've got the documentation that we can defend, and we got everything else in order. We've done our will. We've sent a letter over there to your boss. We put everybody in perspective. The terminology was right. We never mentioned you as ever being an officer. You're a private contractor, no more authority than a security guard. We point to other case law that verify that you can check out yourself right there on your own computer and all these things. And now we're officially ready to tell them how much money they owe us for this violation.
Oh, wow.
And we're going through the administrative process, and I'll send that affidavit on down to the sheriff and say, look, this is what I got, and I took the liberty of trying to protect you, sheriff, by sending a copy to the mayor and the governor and this particular list right here of the media. So if you're running for office, kind of hold off on that, you know.
Right. So I can use that, sir, to apply to my case with that fine, or should I just pay the fine and battle afterwards?
Well, in your case, you gave them all the win. You gave them a driver license. You know, I mean, what you going to do? You know, you're going to go around and spend some more money trying to beat a dead horse. You gave the man a driver license. On that driver license, you got a photograph of what you thought was you. Your name in all capital letters, which ain't you. That's an improper noun. And then you sign it, and then you have property of the state. Your vehicle registered the state. The license plate registered the state. And did you sign the ticket?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, what I would do, if I was you, what I would do, if I'm going to do any fighting, I would do it under the cover in the bed. just me by myself. What I would do is next time I'd be prepared. I would have identification that clearly identifies me as a man outside of U.S. corporation jurisdiction. And you can get that done by getting you typing into your browser the World Services Authority. They have the World Citizen Passport. You can do your estate letter. You can do an affidavit of identity. I have it signed and notarized and stuff. That's a form of identification. And
right.
All of this stuff. And but the last thing you ever want to give a private contractor is a driver's license, because a driver's license, number one, is property of the state. That belongs to somebody else. Okay. And number two, you want to make sure that you are ready to get out there on this pavement.
Right.
See, because if your vehicle registered to the state, then, if you paid the vehicle off, you got it deregistered, you take the vehicle, no liens against it, put it into your trust, and
right.
make it a part of your estate. Then you create your own place and then send a letter down to the sheriff putting them on notice of the fact that you will be traveling and not driving. Here's a photograph of the vehicle. Here's a photograph of your place. Here's a photograph of your identification. And please respond to this within 30 days through affidavit. Now, if he doesn't do that and somebody comes out there and stop you, then you go ahead on the file and start filing them lawsuits against him because you put him on notice. He did not respond to the affidavit in the time limit. You went to the notice of default and dishonor. You went to the notice of default and opportunity to cure, then notice of default and dishonor. And then whoever else touches you out there, they're in violation, you see. So you're prepared. You got evidence. You got it down on disk. You said. Now you're officially ready to be what? Left alone.
Right.
When you see lights flashing, you wonder what's going on, because they certainly are not about to mess with you again. And you discover they won't. They'll be trying to get around you.
So I definitely got to get
behind
those,
you.
I have to get those processes in order, go to the World Services, get a World Citizen card, and go in order and do that.
Well, before you get to spending money on that right there, why don't you give me a shout? Because we got all that stuff right there in my archives, along with the knowledge. Remember what I told you. You're not talking
that's
about the document yet. You got it?
Yes, sir. I'm going to get it tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, when you get that right there, then we're ready to get maneuver into position so that we can become one of the untouchables.
Yes, sir.
Remember back in the days of the gangsters and stuff, we had the untouchables.
That's right.
Okay, brother, you got another question?
I don't want to hog the time, but I can also apply all my previous. Well, you guys told me, right now we're just discussing this webinar is strictly on courts. Are we talking about? I want to find out how can I get my long form version of my birth certificate to claim my estate?
Don't go that way.
Gotcha.
I tell you what you do. You call me tomorrow, because we gotta file down some rough edges.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm good. Until then, I'm good. Thank you. Yes, sir.
All right, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me get down to the next call. I'll talk to you tomorrow. You got my personal number, 904-303-9061. Give me a call, and then we'll iron it out.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the offer. Please, brother.
Peace. Okay, 904. Here we go.
How you doing?
904. Hey, I'm fine.
How you doing?
Who am I talking to?
My name is Rashawn. I talked with you a few times, on a regular basis. But you told me to call you because you was usually busy. But I have a question for you, man. Back in 2007, I was coming across the Matthews Bridge, and the police was in a high speed police chase, and I was trying to get out of their way, not knowing that it was four cars on the right lane side, and, the first one had a flat tire, and the other ones was backed up, and it led to me getting into a wreck, and that's besides the point, but I was sued by Tallahassee for $5,000, which, you know, they I guess some way they went through the DMV, and every time I have to pay them $50 a month, and every time I don't pay them, they cancel out my license, so it suspends my license without me knowing most of the times too. So recently they told me I had to, matter of fact, back in 2007, they told me I had to carry an SR-22 for 3 years, and I paid them. I was paying them and paying insurance, but it kept breaking my pocket. So now I'm backed up like a few months, and I owe them like $450, Tallahassee $450, to be able to get my SR-22 and to get my license back. And I was trying to figure out, like, what would be the best way to go around that, because since then they've caught me driving 3 times with suspended license, and now they're trying to tell me my license will be suspended for 5 years, and, you know, they're just basically trying to get money out of me and time, you know, and that's my livelihood. I drive to work, and my wife's about to start working again, so I'm going to have to take my daughter to daycare, you know, and I don't want to get stopped, and I don't know what to say or how to handle myself, and it puts me back in the jail.
All right, well, let me ask you this. What's the name of the company that you drive for?
None.
So why you getting upset with them because they trying to take their property away from you?
No, to be honest, you know, man, you talked a few times. I want them, they can have it, man. You know, I'm trying to get around it, man. I'm just trying to get around it because
I see what you do. Because I just got to tell you, call me tomorrow. Let's find out where you're at so we go to where it gets you straight now.
All right, man. Okay, I'm gonna do that because I need you bad, man. Because they trying to really railroad me, man. And that's my livelihood, man. I can't do nothing without it, man.
Of course you can. The first thing they ain't doing nothing but taking back their stuff. You trying to keep their stuff? they license. They don't send you some stuff because they got you believing that a lion is a rabbit. Didn't I tell you that at the beginning?
Yeah, you told me that.
A lion is not a rabbit. It's a lion.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
That ain't none of your driver's license. That belongs to that's property of the state. You go, First thing you have to do is just like I was telling the other gentleman, you got to maneuver in the position. And after you get your position established, then you can enforce your position. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So give me a shout tomorrow, and we'll find out where you're at. We're going to take this. And we're going to nail one nail at a time, okay?
All right, what's a good time to reach you tomorrow?
Call me after 9 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Standard Time.
All right, thank you, my man.
All right, then. Peace, bro. Is there anybody else that got a question or comment? Go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll open up the mic so that you all can get in and you can let me know what's going on, okay? I'm going to say this one more time. When these people tell you that we going to suspend your driver license, they're not suspending your driver license. They're suspending their property. That's property. That's all you got to do, turn it up on the back and read it. Just read it. Take it time. See, when we go get a driver license, we be so happy we got a driver license. We look at the front, look at our picture, make sure we look good. See, we want to make sure we look good, and we want to make sure that we sign it and the signature look pretty, everything be pretty, because we think if we give the police a good-looking driver's license, he might say, ooh, man, this guy look good. I ain't going to write him no ticket. No. It don't go like that, okay? All right. Area code 240. 240.
How you doing, Brother Tahaka? This is Dao calling.
Hey, Dao, what's going on, bro?
Hey, how you doing? I don't really have any problem with the license or anything, but I was just speaking up for other brothers that's going through a lot of stuff. I see when they go through the process, they always stay in court all the time, going back and forth to court, getting locked up, going back and forth to court, getting locked up. Like in this country.
What kind of process?
The process of, you know, driving without a license and you know, trying to defend it.
They do.
The thing,
but they ain't never happened to me.
They ain't never happened to you?
No. I got it. I got on one. Well, actually, I got on twice. But I got on so good, they like, well, no, that's that guy again. Don't mess with it, because
so
let
me ask you
something right.
Okay, Buster Hawker, where you live, okay, say like you want to drive to New York, like coming out of your state where you live, and they don't really know nothing about you. You may be good in Florida, but you might head
mm-hmm.
out to Kentucky, D.C., or New York, and they catch you out
mm-hmm.
out of your state, and then now you're dealing with another jurisdiction, don't know nothing about you, and you have to stay in jail
mm-hmm.
in somebody else's state, Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
D.C., California. You drive somewhere, and they pop you, and you're in a new territory. How would you handle
mm-hmm.
that situation? You locked up somewhere outside of your territory where you established. And
the first thing I do the same old thing that I always do. I'm going to give them what I got. There's never any argument. I want to know, because I'm not interested in the peons. I want to know who is your boss? What's his name? I can look
mm-hmm.
at the cars. And I remember the number on the cars, so I don't need one of them. Okay, all I got to do is get a noose around one neck. That's all I got. Because I'm like this right here. This is where I do it. If I left Florida and I went anywhere, there's not going to be an argument. And first of all, I'm going to drive carefully because I'm going to abide by the signs. If signs say 30 miles an hour, I'm going to be conscious of that and drive then like that, you know. That's what I'm going to
mm-hmm.
do. Now, I'm not going to, because I have the right, freedom of right to travel, I bring in laws, because I don't do that. That's
mm-hmm.
not what I'm going to do. But if I'm tampered with, I'm going to do the same thing that was done in Florida and the same thing that was done in North Carolina and the same
mm-hmm.
thing that was done in Alabama, Mississippi, Detroit, New York City, Los Angeles, all over the country. There are people who are actually doing this, but the media is not broadcasting this to you. The media, if they're going to broadcast something, they're going to broadcast that you guys that are doing this, and for the rest of you guys, this is wrong. You are breaking the law, and we're going to threaten you. We're going to put you in jail and all that right there. But it's how you're going to handle the situation. What do you know, and what do you have under your belt to go about handling the situation? Have you ever walked by a cage where had a dog in a cage, and no matter what you do, that dog don't bark. He just
mm-hmm.
sit there. As long as you stare at him, he gonna stare at you.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not gonna move. He's not gonna bark. You do anything you want, that dog ain't bark. But you open that door, and that dog will be all over you. So you don't
right.
get excited. You just know, and when you get out, you know, you just do what you gotta do. Cause if I went to another town, yeah, let's
mm-hmm.
say I went up in Georgia, and
mm-hmm.
they're saying, well, you know, we don't recognize this, we're gonna have to arrest you and stuff. Well, okay. Well, Philly, y'all going to hold me up because I was headed on the way out of town. So is there a place that after I get out of jail, is there a place where I can maybe sit down in a little hotel or whatever for a couple of days until I can get somebody to, you know, come down here and get me either where I can, you know, get on my way? Because what I'm going to do is get up in there. And when I get up in there, that's when I'm going to start weaving my weave. I want to know who the judge, I want to know who the prosecutor, I want to know who the sheriff of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sling this paper. And when I sling this paper, then I'm going to start dealing with them from long distance. But we will be joined at the hip. And I'm not going away. And the next time I come into town, I'm going to have a lot of men. On the same
A lot of men?
Yeah, a lot of men. Mm-hmm. As a team, a law team. But that's how you do that. You got another question?
No. I don't have no more questions. I'm gonna sit here and listen.
All right, let me go on to the next man. Area code 202. Here go 202.
Tahaka.
Hey, man.
Tahaka. Hey, what's
yeah.
going on, man?
You got it? Who am I speaking to, man?
Yeah, it's David Michael, Duke of Manassas,
okay.
down here, Central Florida, not too far from you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I heard you on Yusuf's channel, actually. And that's
okay.
how I got directed me over here. So I had some questions. And
what you got?
Pretty much a lot of it's already answered. But I was curious about you made your own plates and your own ID. I was curious, you went ahead and you just filed that with local sheriff's department, yes?
No, I ain't filed nothing. I got on my computer.
Okay.
And I designed it. I had a lot of fun. I had to make the color right, the font right. I had a lot of fun. I loved that. And when I got it
right.
just right, I went ahead and laminated and had it cut
mm-hmm.
and sealed and taped so no water wouldn't get in there and put it on the back of my truck. And then I did my ID and got that made up, got everything. You know, all the documents that I put together was everything that I could defend. And I know doggone well that they couldn't call a lie. And they couldn't answer to me when they were wrong. So as I did that, I got out there on the pavement. You got a lot of background noise there, bud.
Sorry about that. I'm in transit.
And I got out there on the pavement and
just went
looking for the popo. And first I went up me and DA agents. It was a van full of DA agents. And I pulled right outside the DA agents. They went in the store. They had on the guns and shoulder holsters and all that. I don't know where they come from. But I got what I got my beer and everything, and brought it out there and stuck it in the car. And I waited on them, and they come out and crunk up. But I backed out in front of them and pulled out in front. Right up to the stop sign, so they could pull right behind me. So, but the thing was, we had to pull right to the red light. They pulled right behind me, and I did a U-turn at the red light, and they followed me on down. And finally, they went around me, and I'm like, "Oh, fellas, y'all had me. Y'all ain't doing nothing." So I had to go find some more. So finally, after 2 or 3 days worth of this. I pull up in the parking lot of the post office, and I was pulling out the pipe side of the post office. There was a brother and a Caucasian cop. Caucasian cop was sitting inside the car, and the brother was sitting there talking to somebody in another car. So I pull up beside the car, and I stop and look dead in his face. And he was looking at me like, "What's wrong with this dude?" And then I slowly pulled out in front of him and put on brakes and then cruised on around the corner. Of course, here he come. He just called his partner, come on, it's this guy. It's, so they pulled me on around and they pulled me around and stopped. And I pulled over in the little Chinese restaurant lot. And when I got there, they had to call a whole slew of police. And so he said, "Well, I'm going to write you a ticket." I said, "Oh, Lord, sir, that's fine. That's fine. That's okay. That's fine." And he said, "I'm writing you a ticket because you don't have a driver's license. You don't have a proper registration on your vehicle. And that's why I'm writing a ticket." I said, "Okay." But the brother, when I had, they wanted to look at my identification, so I gave him the book with all my ID in it. But the brother, he jumped out of the car. He said, "Hey, man." He said, "Come here, man." He said, "Man, tell me what this is, man. I ain't never seen nothing like this." I said, "Well," I said, "you see that guy that you sitting in the car with? I said, you got a history, and he ain't." I say, "This is your history." I say, "They stole your history." Well, now, why guy, he was standing right, he wouldn't look up. Well, I can tell he's getting ready. He said, boy, I don't like this joke of his. He said, well, what is this here? I said, well, I said, don't you see them Supreme Court rulings right down there? He said, yeah, I see that. He said, but I said, let me ask you a question. I said, what's your nationality? And he said, well, look, I ain't finna get it all in there. I said, well, you see, the problem is, the only person that needs a driver's license is somebody being paid to drive. I said, but your partner's sitting right there. He don't know that. I said, he's writing a ticket. But he don't know that if I want to, I can sue him and his boss.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, all right, man. I said, he said, do you have any information on this? I said, yeah, I got some DVDs on it. So I can't. When he got a DVD, I said, take that home and look at it. I said, you look at it, then call me. And then by that time, yeah, about 5 or 6 more carloads of white Caucasians come up. I said, y'all want a DVD too? Said, nah, we don't want it. So after that, the word was out. So I got a little ticket and wrote no contract on it, took it down there, put a certificate of service on it, and I handed it to the clerk that was in that when I walked out the building. So the next time, they said, well, we're going to try him again. But this time, they had the entire police force, because it had to be, I don't think I counted all the cars. I knew it was over 30 men. And there's one big, tall Caucasian gentleman. He was the older gentleman. And he came up there, and he was talking to him, and they was pointing over there to me. And they gave him my ID. And he walked over to the car, peeped in the car at me. I peeped at him. And he went back and handed the ID to him. And I, you know, because I was sitting in my truck, and they didn't take my ID. He told them, I heard Stanley say, well, look, you can do what you want to do, but I'm out of here. But when he starts frying butts, he's not going to get mine. I'm out of here. So when he left, all the officers left except one that had pulled me over. And he came up to me and said, well, you know, I could arrest you. I said, man, you can't do nothing. Give me my stuff. Let me go. After that, I had no more problem out of it. I ride downtown, park in front of the parking meter. Go in, stay long as I want to. When I come out of that building, I said, no shit. And I didn't know. I would never do any speeding or anything like that. And then it stopped me one more time when I was driving a female friend of mine's car. And after that, it was over. That was the end. Sheriff, he got mad. Somebody got to do something. So he went over there on the other side of town and got a law firm. And the law firm come write me. At the bottom of the paper, they got down there, we are a debt collector, and they represent the sheriff at the same time. So I sent a letter back, sent that last letter to him, sent the Supreme Court ruling. I ain't heard now another peep out of him or them. And girl, she called me. She said, these cops keep pulling up behind my car, riding on my bumper. I said, they ain't finna cut no lights on, they ain't pulling you over. I said, they reading that car to make sure that's the one that they bought and told them they better not count.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of it. The animal problem out of it.
All right, hey man, appreciate that story. You mind me asking what program that was you used?
What do you mean, what for, program?
For that original ID you did up.
Yeah, I crafted that piece by piece from different places based on what I had studied and what I had learned. I gathered it from different places. It ain't one no template. I created my own template.
Yeah, yeah.
We got out on the pavement, and me and them went riding around man to man.
Gotcha.
All right,
all right. Appreciate it.
Area code 850.
Hey, Taharka, how's it going there, man? This is I use the name James. What's going on?
Hey, I'm fine, James. What's going on with you, man?
Hey, man, I hear you having fun explaining that whole driver's license thing, man. I mean, people don't even know that they're getting game, yo.
Well, the thing is, I be kind of careful in talking to brothers, because a lot of them, they see something and they want to jump out there and do it. But it don't go like that. You got to, you know, see, a fighter don't get in the ring until you get trained first.
Yeah.
Well, they want to, well, I saw him do this, so I'm going to get in the ring. No, it don't go like that. When you get out there messing with that bow, see, prayer's all right in prayer meeting, but when you get out there messing with a bow, you got to have something else. So,
yeah, man.
You got to learn this.
Yeah, I hear you on that, man. I mean, I try to get into your show to talk, you know, to talk about stuff like that, because, man, these folks out here tried to game me too, and I'm like, nah, I don't play that mess. I say, I know what it is to be a driver, operator, and a traveler. So I told folks like that. And those authorities tried to get me on it too.
Well, they're trying.
Up here in Virginia, D.C., they tried to put the game on me. I'm like, I already know what's going on, so you should know that. You know what I mean?
You gotta know that these guys, they're trying to get paid. That's how they make a living.
Oh, yeah.
It's extortion and robbery. That's all it is. You know, you don't stop at a stop sign, you owe me money. You can cut your blinker on before turning right, you owe me money.
Yeah.
You speeding, you owe me money.
Or like my case, it's like, and I made an illegal left turn, you owe me money. But here's the thing, though. I mean, it's on your show, right? So I told him, I said, look, I have an ID. I'm using, quote-unquote, somebody else's car, quote-unquote, because they have tax registration. And like you said, if it has the tag and registration, then it's ownership of the state, not the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after that, they tried to run game on me. And I told them, I was like, look, you don't need permission to travel public roads. And if I had a quote-unquote license, and if it wasn't in another state, it's not valid in the current state that I'm in. So what's the point?
You ain't supposed to know that.
Hey, they say I ain't supposed to know that. But, hey, I gave them that question. I was like, hey, so let me get this straight. If I'm in Virginia and I move to Maryland and it's 5 miles that I have to move, you mean to tell me that I have to change my driver's license, quote-unquote? Are you serious? Hey, more money to y'all when y'all supposed to be paying me?
Well, see, that's what happened in North Carolina. That's what blew up North Carolina when they stopped Rod Class. And they pulled the same thing on him, and he said, man, you can't do that. He said, you're breaking the law, and he did it. But when they did, he went to suing judges, prosecutors. He had the police running across the street. The judges tried to pack up and run. And the police holding them up, to me. He said, we ain't even officers of the law. And he said, you ain't. You better get everything out your name, because he's going to sue you for everything you got head for the heel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, boy. That had me rolling.
Yes, sir.
That had me rolling. So, like, as of right now, man, I'm trying to, you know, tell people, I'm like, hey, look, you're getting game. And this is how you're getting game. All you got to do is read the law books, and then you'll see how you're getting game.
If you had to get it under your belt. Once you get it under your belt and whatever documentation that you're going to use on them, make sure you're good at it. I seen Sammy Davis Jr. come on TV. I don't forget what show it was, a long time ago. And this is the first time I ever seen him do this. He come on with a cowboy outfit on. And the brother pulled the gun out, the homeless boy, he went to spinning that gun, putting it back in, spinning it up on the side, every kind of which way, flipping it around, it was falling just right. Boy, he was doing that thing. And when he got through, everybody started clapping. After they slowed down, Sammy said, hell, if I wasn't good at it, I wouldn't even have put it on. I said, go ahead, bro. Yeah. That's how you had to do that thing, man. You know, this is a game, you know. And if you allow them to roll you, they're going to roll you. They're going to rob you. And it's just like a bully. You know, a bully going to keep on bullying you until you knock him out. See, a lot of people think, well, he bullied me, I'm going to go home and pray. And my grandmama told me to get on my knees and pray. No. Go talk to your daddy. Your daddy going to tell you, what did he do? Next time he push you.
You push him back. You punch him, knock him out. That's the thing, man. We got too many We got too many people out there trying to say, oh, it'll be okay, just pray on it. No, dog, that ain't what we supposed to do. We supposed to be fighting.
No, see, if everybody learned this, if everybody learned this and we start doing this here, all over the United States, the game is over. You know, it's too much to fight, man. You know, all the people we've been robbing, these people are going to start turning on us. But we got we got 60-year-old little old ladies pulling out a freedom of right to travel on us. When we get to doing this thing, it's over. It's over, man.
Yep.
We got to stop.
Oh, yeah.
Stop letting them roll us, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, that's why I watched your boy Ty Sarik on the whole thing. And then after that, man, it's been nonstop research on that, man.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, hey, I'm ready.
Okay, brother, I appreciate you calling. Okay. All right. Area code 760. 760.
Y'all are right. Hello. Y'all got help.
Okay. 704.
Hello.
Hey, man. Come on.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Who am I talking to?
Kelvin Rivens, Bay.
All right. What's on your mind, brother?
Yes, I had a question. Well, first of all, Islam. Yes, I had a question. Right. Okay. I had got locked up for it's nothing major, but I got locked up for it and I was doing time in jail for it. Okay, but they come to me while I was in jail with a charge, or a gun charge. But I'm already a felon. But
okay.
What I was gonna know is, cause I mean they didn't have no proof. I mean, I told it wasn't mine because it's not mine. You know what I mean? Hit me with, like, I'm going through court now in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know about you know Mo sign or you know I know I'm a Mo. I was born a Mo. And but I don't have my nationality card or nothing like that. But
what that got to do with anything?
But what? My charge?
You in competence. You ain't need this. The fact that you had a nationality. If you was a Chinese and they had you down there, you said, well, look, y'all got to let me out because I'm Chinese. Because America owed the Chinese government a lot of money. So y'all got to let me go. Ain't good out there with
that. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so, that's your nationality. That's your legal and political status. And if you're going to use that, you're going to use that for a human rights violation. And when you, by the time you get there, you want to drag them over there in the International Court of Trade, and you want to bring at least 50 men, which are representing your government. That's how you got with that. But you're talking about being in commerce, so you want to take Rome's stick and get to swinging with Rome's stick. You don't want to, you want to learn the little rules and regulations, a little contract, a little game, and take that and work with them.
Yes. Okay. Well, honestly, what I want to do, because, see, I'm back and forth from North Carolina to Ohio, because, see, I'm originally from North Carolina, but I'm in Ohio right now. Mm-hmm. But I want to get my status. Like, I want to go be able to get my card and, you know, be recognized as a Morris American. You know what I mean? I want everything that's owed to me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right.
But,
what I recommend you do is go in and register with your government. You register with the Morris government?
No, that's what I'm saying. I've been looking and trying to find and all kinds of stuff, but I really don't know where to.
Well,
I know
you got
temples.
A paper handy. I ain't talking about
no again.
You got a paper and pencil handy?
Hold on. Let me get it right now. I need all this.
I can't be holding on now.
Oh, man.
I can't hold on.
Hold on.
Just go to MorrisAmericanGov.org.
I got you right now.
I tell you what, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back. You 704. I'm going to be back. Okay, Mo, we back. And what we're going to do now, we're going to go in here. We're going into the courtroom now. And we're going to deal with what to say. Okay, we're going to deal with what to say in that courthouse. Now, y'all pay attention to my favorite, because the little green frog, this is my favorite right here.
We are going to show you how to enforce your right to a fair hearing and to win your ticket in the process. To make this plan work for you, you must listen and speak it out loud to cement it in your brain and tongue so it becomes crystal clear in your own mind and you will be prepared for any response. You must be clear enough that you don't have to stop and think, but must always be in control of this plan. The first appearance you make in court is your arraignment, in which the purpose is for the court to present the charges and find out how you intend to react, by standing up for your rights or being fearful and an easy target. During this proceeding, the judge will inform you of the charges against you and attempt to get you to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty. A third choice is no contest, which is essentially pleading guilty without admitting guilt. Be careful, however, because as soon as you open your mouth to enter a plea, you have given them formal jurisdiction over you. If you intend to follow our procedure and win, you must not enter a plea. The judge's first question to you should be something to the effect of, do you understand the charges against you? Or it might be, how do you intend to plea? You must say, no, you do not understand, or you cannot enter a plea until you get some questions answered. The judge will probably be irritated and try to intimidate you. You must politely state that you need to have some questions answered before you can enter your plea. Tell him that you do not understand the nature and cause of the action against you. Once the judge has agreed to answer your questions, your first question will be, is this going to be a civil action or a criminal action? In the highly unlikely chance that the judge answered your question by saying it is a civil action, your response will be, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record reflect that this is a civil action. Your Honor, since this is a civil action, I make a motion to dismiss for lack of a sworn complaint by an injured party, and no injured party is present. More likely, the judge has stated that this is a criminal action, so you respond, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action. Now I have another question. Your Honor, the Constitution grants this court two different criminal jurisdictions. One is a criminal jurisdiction under the common law, and the other is a criminal jurisdiction under admiralty or military tribunal venue from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. In which of these two criminal jurisdictions does the court intend to try me? Don't panic if you don't get the article, section, and clause. You'll have them down by the time you have practiced. But if you are afraid of getting it wrong, it would be wise to have some brief notes with that clause number in it. If the judge gives a specific answer, you will again say, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action under whichever jurisdiction he replied. However, don't expect an easy answer to that question, as you have just exposed the court's fraud. The truth is that they are acting under a military tribunal of which they have no right to use with you. But the judge can't say that. And he can't say common law, because if he does, you will make a motion to have the case dismissed because there is no sworn complaint by an injured party and no injured party present, exactly like he did if he said it was a civil action. When you protest that there is no injured party, if the judge is silly enough to say that the state of whatever state you're in is the injured party, then say, Your Honor, I make a motion that this case be dismissed. We are in the wrong court. If the state is a party to the case, they cannot also be the judge and prosecutors. This case needs to be transferred to federal court or be dismissed. More likely, the judge will try to avoid answering and will tell you to get a licensed attorney for such legal advice. Your response will be, thank you, Your Honor, but I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office if you did your duty under the Constitution. You see, I am not seeking legal advice. What I want to know is legal intent. I have the right to appear as myself in my own person without a licensed attorney, and in order to intelligently defend myself, I have to know the jurisdiction that this court is operating under, because the rules of criminal procedure under a common law jurisdiction are very different from the rules of criminal procedure under an admiralty or military tribunal. I need to know under which jurisdiction you intend to try me in order for me to proceed with this case. The Sixth Amendment grants me the right to know the jurisdiction being applied, and it grants you the duty to inform me, and I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office for doing your duty. Therefore, will you please answer the question so this court is properly identified? If the judge still responds by telling you to get an attorney, your answer will be, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that I, your name here, the accused in this criminal action, has asked the court to divulge the nature and cause of the accusation upon the authority of the Sixth Amendment, and that this court has failed in its duty to inform me of the nature and cause of the action. Furthermore, let the record also show that this court intends to bring this action against me under a secret jurisdiction known only to licensed attorneys. At this point, the judge might claim that this is a statutory jurisdiction under the statutes of the state of whatever state you're in. If he does so, your next statement is, "Thank you, Your Honor." Let the record of this court then show that it intends to conduct a criminal action against me under a statutory jurisdiction. But, Your Honor, that raises another question. I have never heard of such a thing as a criminal action under statutory jurisdiction, and there is no such jurisdiction established in the Constitution. I would be happy to accept this, Your Honor, if you could please tell me where I can find the published rules of criminal procedure under a statutory jurisdiction, and where this nature, cause, and jurisdiction information exists. It is imperative that I have the published rules of procedure so that I may conduct a fair defense and a fair trial. Now keep in mind the judge made up this jurisdiction. There is no granted authority for a statutory jurisdiction and no published rules, but don't expect him to tell you that. He must either lie, dismiss the case, or unlawfully enter a plea on your behalf. In rare cases, he might even threaten you with contempt of court. If he threatens contempt, say, "Your Honor, I do not wish to be held in contempt. I am simply trying to exercise my Sixth Amendment right that you disclose the nature and cause of the charges against me. I can provide court citations that show that the exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. Please either identify the properly established jurisdiction, or I make a motion that you dismiss the case against me." Also unlikely, but still possible, is that the judge will tell the truth when you ask under which criminal jurisdiction you were being tried, and will tell you that it is an admiralty jurisdiction. If this happens, you would respond, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this court intends to proceed with a criminal action against me, your name here, as a condition of contract under an admiralty jurisdiction as a military tribunal under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. However, Your Honor, you must realize that you have no such jurisdiction without also having a valid international contract in dispute. I am not aware of having entered into any international contracts, so I deny that any such contract exists. Will you please instruct the prosecuting attorney to inform this court if there is such a contract, and if so, to place it into evidence, and explain how I am party to it and am compelled to perform under it. If the prosecution cannot do so, Your Honor, I make a motion that this case against me be dismissed." Of course, if at any time your case is dismissed, make your pronouncement, "Thank you, Your Honor, let the record of this court reflect that case number blah 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 against your name here has been dismissed. Now leave quietly, save your gloating for outside of the courtroom." And if at any time you sense a good opportunity to make a motion for dismissal, make it, even if it wasn't part of your prepared script. You need to be flexible and jump on any opportunities that are presented to you. Let's say that the judge has had enough of your questions and decides to help you out by entering a plea of not guilty on your behalf. Immediately object. "Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because entering a plea is my job or my attorney's job. Has the court made a judicial determination that I am not guilty?" Now you've really trapped him. For him to say yes, he has admitted that you are not guilty. At this point, state, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court reflect that the judge has made a judicial determination that I am not guilty of the charges against me. Therefore, I make a motion that this case be dismissed because the judge has determined that I am not guilty." If he says no, he has not made a judicial determination, make a motion that the plea be withdrawn and you be allowed to enter your own plea once you know the nature and cause of the case pending against you. If the judge enters a plea of no contest, object, saying, "Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because entering a plea is my or my attorney's job. I make a motion that the plea be withdrawn. For you to make a judicial determination that I am entering a plea of no contest would result in the court treating me as though I had pled guilty. The court is trying to constrain me to an unfair plea choice in the absence of my understanding the nature and cause of the charges against me." Or let's say that the judge instead gives you a continuance and demands that you obtain a licensed attorney. Ask, "Has the court made a judicial determination to deny me the right to defend myself in my own person and to force me into hiring a licensed attorney that will conspire with the court to try me under a secret jurisdiction known only to the judge and the licensed attorney? If you walk out of this hearing without a dismissal, go to step 2, pretrial motions contained in your written packet. You should ask for a motions hearing, or you could ask to have the motions heard at the beginning of the trial. However, to ask for a motions hearing shows the judge that you are not willing to be railroaded so easily. Tell him that you must resolve some pivotal key issues in order to continue and that these motions must be heard prior to a trial. At a motions hearing, you cannot be found guilty, but the case can be dismissed. Either way, when the motions are heard, they must each stand on their own and be heard and ruled separately from the rest. Don't just hand over 5 motions and let the judge say all are overruled. Make him rule on each one individually. Now let's take this from the top in the manner in which it will probably happen. Do you understand the charges against you? No, Your Honor, I don't. I need you to answer a couple of questions. I need to understand the nature and cause of the charges against me. Is this case going to be heard under a civil jurisdiction or a criminal jurisdiction? Criminal. Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action. Now I have another question. Your Honor, the Constitution grants this court 2 different criminal jurisdictions. One is a criminal jurisdiction under the common law, and the other is a criminal jurisdiction under admiralty or military tribunal venue from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. In which of these 2 criminal jurisdictions does the court intend to try me? If you don't understand the law, you need to hire an attorney. Thank you, Your Honor, but I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office if you did your duty under the Constitution. You see, I am not seeking legal advice. What I want to know is legal intent. I have the right to appear as myself in my own person without a licensed attorney, and in order to intelligently defend myself, I have to know under which jurisdiction that this court is operating, because the rules of criminal procedure under a common law jurisdiction are very different from the rules of criminal procedure under an admiralty or military tribunal. I need to know under which jurisdiction you intend to try me in order for me to proceed with this case. The Sixth Amendment grants me the right to know the jurisdiction being applied, and it grants you the duty to inform me. And I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office for doing your duty. Therefore, will you please answer the question so this court is properly identified? This is a court under statutory jurisdictions and the laws of the state of whatever state you're in. Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that it intends to conduct a criminal action against me under a statutory jurisdiction. But, Your Honor, that raises another question. I have never heard of such a thing as a criminal action under statutory jurisdiction, and there is no such reference in the Constitution. I would be happy to accept this, Your Honor, if you could please tell me where I can find the published rules of criminal procedure under a statutory jurisdiction, and where this nature, cause, and jurisdiction information exists. It is imperative that I have the published rules of procedure so that I may conduct a fair defense and a fair trial. Look, I'm just going to enter a plea on your behalf and set a trial date. I enter a plea of no contest. Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because offering a plea is my or my attorney's job. For you to make a judicial determination that I am entering a plea of no contest would result in the court treating me as though I had pled guilty. The court is trying to constrain me to an unfair plea choice in the absence of my understanding the nature and cause of the charges against me. I make a motion that the plea be withdrawn and this case be dismissed because the court has failed to identify a legitimate jurisdiction. I deny that motion. Your trial date will be such and such a date. Your Honor, I would like to request that we set a motions hearing prior to the trial date, as I must resolve some pivotal key issues in order to continue, and these motions must be heard prior to the trial so that I can properly defend myself.
Okay, we back. Now, that's my boy there. That's the Green Frog. we put him in my library. And then, what do you do with him? Well, what you do is, for those of you who have my archives, you get in there and you get your paper and pencil, and you can listen, write, pause, rewind until you get that whole thing down, because you can carry these notes into the courtroom, and you can use these in there. And the fact that you're looking at your notes and firing from your paper, you have every right to do that, and it can't restrain you or stop you from doing that. So that is an excellent way to handle yourself up in there. I'm going back over here to the phone lines now. Area code 704, you got your pencil and paper?
Yes, hold on.
704. All right.
Yes,
no. Write down www. Dot. What are you doing? You still hunting?
No, I got you. www.
Okay. Moorish, M-O-O-R-I-S-H. American Gov, G-O-V. Moorish American Gov. .org.
American,
when you get over there, do your registration, you see, yeah, MorrisAmericanGov.org. When you get over there, you see the registration form, and you see the number for the conference call that's held. You might want to dial in that 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and they'll come on. And if you got any questions and stuff, you would need to know where any more is at. That's in the government in your area. You can ask these questions and tell you exactly where they are. Get to know your government. They get to know you in the time that you need them in the event of human rights violations and stuff of this nature. That's when we use that.
Yes.
But in the meantime, what I do is I like to, if I'm going to go in there, I wear my fez and stuff, and I'll look exactly like a Moor. But when it's time to go to the wall, I pull out a stick they recognize. One of theirs.
Yeah.
Go to work with them. Let me catch you on the line, brother. That's all you got to do.
Okay. Peace.
All right. Peace, man. All right. So I dialed into a party. So we got... We got to get out of the party. Okay, if anybody got any questions, comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and we will open up the phone lines so you can tell us what's going on, and we can deal with it, okay?
Greetings, family. We're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet, and we work on one particular agenda, and we have been working this agenda, and that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agriculture systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link: blacks won't practice group economics, blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up, and I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician. on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.0005% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March is...
I've been asked over and over by a lot of people about the exercising your freedom of rights to travel. And that is something that I have done. I've done it quite well, and I do it today. However, it is something that you have to understand. First of all, there are things that you need to know in order to have the confidence to get out there on that pavement and defend yourself and be able to do this thing successfully. This information is contained in Tucker's archives. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and once you look over that page, click on TahakaArchives.org. Go over there, and you'll see Tahaka's Archives Master Library, where the audio, video, the documentation, and everything else that you would need is right there available for you in order for you to exercise your freedom of rights to travel. That saves you a ton of money. That saves you jail. That keeps you from having to have a driver's license, tag, registration, and all that kind of stuff. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. Try to call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, Moses, we're back. Y'all hold your seatbelts now. We're finna go back down up in here. And we're going to learn some things about how to handle ourselves up in this courtroom. Okay?
Well, hold on. If you look at things as more as they really are, you're in a situation where you're forced to be there and has nothing to do with your consent. You got a guy with a robe on, you got a prosecutor, and then there's you. Nothing involves your consent. These are just men forcing you to do something. But they're pretending to be administering justice. Well, these are people with absolutely no voluntary support whatsoever, right? All taxation is compulsory, so government has no voluntary support. It's a really great question to ask a congressman or someone. Say, given the fact that all taxation is compulsory, do you have any evidence you have any voluntary support whatsoever? Now they're stumped. The only thing, who's going to build the roads? People. Next it. You know, that's why yesterday voluntarism is the easiest thing in the world to convert people to. They already are. So an example of this, in looking at the situation where they're just people and not accepting this ridiculous myth that they're honorable, okay, you can ask them very effective questions. They will actually dig the hole for themselves because they have to maintain a presumption of legitimacy. See, if we're in court, you guys are sitting here, if you're not buying with me, if I'm the judge, if you're not buying this crap, you're not going to pay me. So I got to do a good job making this look good, which I think I'm not doing a good job now. I'm failing now. So one of the things that we do when we go in there is to not be confrontational. A lot of the damage control is to get the idea out of our heads and out of our hearts, especially, that we're not here to fight. I call it in the book Zen in the Art of Litigation, because you do not want to be a combatant. If you're argumentative, you're disagreeing with them, they're just going to disagree with you, and you've committed the cardinal due process sin. You've allowed them to be responsive. Being responsive is their only real obligation there for due process. Don't let them be responsive. So what I present, especially in a new book with an explicit model of this, what I present is an easy-to-learn model based on looking things more as they are. Because I'm sure if you saw a judge walking around here with a robe on and he started screaming contempt, we'd all start laughing at him. All right? There was somebody the other day doing that. It was hilarious. So when we go into court, and you can hear this when I did it with the tax hearing. So I have a contemporary example, a real-life thing, and you can hear how it really, really binds them up. And I don't have to quote the law. I don't even have to know the law, because I don't. Okay? I can't stand up here and quote statutes. It's not my thing. But you don't need to. And this is why what I do is teach people to be their own attorney. That they don't have to use lawyers. They don't have to spend $250 to $500 an hour for someone to talk abstractions. And just make a deal. So what we do is we got the situation. We're not making any. And Gina, just let me know when I got 5 minutes left. So what we do when we go in is ask the judge if we're entitled to a fair hearing. And he's got to say, well, yeah, of course. We're Americans. We're fair. Great. Can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? Well, no, of course not. Nice. This is a bad spot to be in if you're a judge. So now I ask the judge, because we are, you know, through investigation, which I have a lot more on the website and the archives of the radio show, I'm going to, knowing what we already know, that's all a fiction, and how things work and what they're doing with these words, because it's all a word game, because I just have to, so let me just summarize, so you can follow. Am I entitled to a fair hearing or a fair trial? Yes. Can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? No. And then I say to him, sir, who do you represent here? Now, most of the time, they're smart enough not to answer this question. Occasionally, we get guys where it's going quick, and they stumble on him. So this happened in Keene. You can go to freekeene.com, and you can see John Arnold saying, State of New Hampshire. Now, you want to be real professional about this and play the babe in the woods. You got to play stupid. You got to be like them. Sir, I'm not an attorney. I don't understand here. If you represent the state of New Hampshire, you represent the plaintiff. Wouldn't that be a conflict of interest? Again, I'm not accusing him of having a conflict of interest. Just asking a question. It's like someone mentioned earlier, what I used to say all the time is, you're playing Columbo. So it could be one of these things. Can I get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest? No. Okay. Just one more thing, sir. Who do you represent here? And so this is obvious. He's already told me I can't get a fair trial if there's a conflict of interest. He's telling me he represents a party. He's saying it, not me. This is a judge. So like I say at workshops, I'm just a schmuck from Long Island. Who cares about what I have to say about the law? The judge with the robe on is the acknowledged legal expert. He's the one saying he represents the state of New Hampshire. And you can go online, you can see this, and I have where judges have said that too. So what do you think they do from this point? Is he calm and rational anymore? 5-year-old with a gun, right? He's screaming. So another otherwise rational, professional man who's asked who he represents is now in a fit of rage. Why? Because you're coming in and non-violently, non-contradictory, you're not fighting him. All you're doing is you're pointing out his many contradictions. And that's not to say we don't all carry contradictions, but we're not using guns to enforce them. He is. He doesn't deserve any, what's the word, you know, soft pedaling. It's a very volatile situation here. So a lot of times, we're not worried that they just throw it out. And people will say, that had nothing to do with the merit that Mark presented. It had no merit to it whatsoever. I don't care. I don't care if anyone, you know, who's a critic thinks there's merit to it or not. It speaks for itself. It's not about me. You know, so if you listen or you see some of the trolls, it's always, it's the way it is with liberty. They attack the person. I might be an idiot. Well, but what about the information? So what I talk about a lot is about a cause of action and that there has to be a legal injury. And they always come back and say, that's frivolous, that doesn't, or it doesn't apply here. It's a new legal standard, by the way. It doesn't apply here. Feel free to use that. That's,
Try that so, argument when you're thinking it's
murder. Well, we get that all the time. So when they say, that doesn't apply here. Really? Can you cite that? Is there any basis to that? No, it just doesn't apply. Great, can I adopt that same legal standard there, tough guy? Okay, a traffic ticket doesn't apply to me. Oh, a basis? Grounds? No, don't need it in this court. Apparently here you don't need that. So I've spoken about this a bit, and I think it's a very important issue. I did a habeas corpus for Ian Freeman, who's a friend of mine who was put in jail up in Keene, New Hampshire for standing in front of a car for 45 seconds. So call it obstruction, say he's guilty of sin. Fine. He's given a year in jail. And they suspended all but 90, and he did 60 days. So I filed a habeas corpus. In their zeal to not hear from me, which I can understand is a common feeling here today, but in their zeal to not hear from me, because I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer. Don't claim to be, don't want to be, not a lawyer. So to convince the judge not to listen to me and not let me say anything, because when we were in court, I confronted him. I need a point of clarification. So what we're going to do is we're going to play that clip now. This is from the Keene Superior Court. This is an illegal recording, according to Philip Mangione and Tom Arnold and these other guys. So this is an illegal recording of the habeas corpus hearing. It's only about a minute long.
All right. If the parties, counsel, et cetera, can identify themselves for the record, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Webb, appearing for the respondent.
My name is David Crocker.
David who?
Crocker.
Okay. And you're from Keene?
Yes, I am.
All right. And I believe by telephone we have Mark Stevens from Arizona.
Yes, good morning, Mark Stevens, and I want to, if I can get a clarification from Mr. Webb, as far as who he's appearing on behalf of.
He's here on behalf of the county Department of Corrections.
Just when I'm reading his paperwork, it says that he's written here, now comes the state of New Hampshire, buying through the office of the Cheshire County Attorney. Is he appearing on behalf of the state of New Hampshire?
Mr. Webb?
Thank you, Your Honor. As I said, I'm appearing on behalf of the respondent. I am representative, of course, of the state.
Sorry.
Okay, just a point of clarification, because this is an important issue. When he says he's appearing on behalf of the state of New Hampshire, is he talking about the body politic?
All right, let's not start with that, sir. His appearance has been filed as counsel for Rick Van Winkler. Wickler, we will proceed. If you do not feel I'm handling this matter appropriately, you may appeal.
Thank you.
Sir? Do not start with me. Just do not start with me. All right, if the parties, counsel, et cetera, can identify themselves for the record.
Thank you.
Sir? Do not start with me. Just do not start with me.
Now, some people may say, why are you making such a big deal about this? Now, this is a man who's a friend of mine, but he hosts Free Talk Live. He's a real guy, just like us. He spent 60 days in jail. To have a legitimate, valid, or legal, constitutional, whatever conviction against him, they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt his presence within the state of New Hampshire. Does that sound like a pretty important thing to you?
Yeah.
And you notice how they don't want to challenge, I can't challenge him. But what I don't have here in the clip, because it would bore you to tears, is the rest of the hearing consisted of him challenging me. Nice. So, say Mark can't do this, great. Why, sir, don't, do not start with me. So, I want to finish here. So in their zeal, they will always give you something to use against them. So So, for example, when we have a witness declared incompetent by asking two questions, did you file a valid cause of action against me? Yes, I did. Okay, officer, how many elements in a valid cause of action? Objection! Calls for a legal conclusion. The witness is incompetent to testify. Great. Strike his testimony and the ticket. Thank you. So what they do is they turn around and... denied. So what you do is you don't fight. You turn around and you pick somebody. You, my Dago friend, you. Come up here and testify on my behalf. Because what happens is the judge freaks out and the prosecutor loses their mind. He can't testify. He's not qualified. Apparently that's not a requirement of this court. Because you just let the cop do it. So, effective damage control is using what they have spewed forth, the nonsense that they have vomited out of their mouth. Because they put the opinion before the facts, you can always turn it around on them. And that's what we've got here. I can't tell you, I'm almost as excited for this as playing in with the band. Anyone who's familiar with me knows that I talk about there has to be a legal injury because the PR is the government was created to protect and maintain the individual right. So that's the basis of the jurisdiction of the court. Well, Mr. John Webb, after thinking it was frivolous, I will read it verbatim. It will be on the website. First, Mr. Stevens lacks standing to file a motion in this matter. He has suffered no legal injury. And he was nice enough to do the research for me and support it with a New Hampshire Supreme Court case. So what I'm encouraging people in Keene, New Hampshire to do, especially if Mr. Webb is your prosecutor, to file this with their motion to dismiss as an exhibit and use his own stupid motion against him. But that is effective damage control. When we're living a life of freedom and liberty and we're living more free, that's going to anger some people. And eventually there's always a risk involved. So what I try to do is minimize that risk so that we can all participate and do something to help bring about a voluntary society. So part of this comes in where I have my parking ticket traffic study, where if you want to participate, you purposely get a parking ticket, and we will track the results. And we've got participants, many in California already, so don't, if you're in California, maybe not. But we've got participants all over the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and England. So we're really looking forward to this. But it's about damage control, limiting the amount of damage. We want to live free. We don't want to ask for permission, but we're going to invite trouble because they really tend to hate that. And so I appreciate the opportunity to come out here and talk to you. Again, my name is Mark Stevens. It's markstevens.net.
Okay, Moses, we're back. As you can see, we're talking about non-combat, simply asking questions. It is very, very important for you, if you're in this situation, to always remember, do not start talking about anything until you say, Your Honor, for the record, make sure we get this, the court's attention that we are aiming at the record for this information. And you might want to also remind the court that we will need a copy of today's transcript of the record. And I need to know where to go and get that. And then go ahead on and proceed. Okay. Hold on, y'all. Area code 760. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 760.
Good evening, Tahaka. This is Malik El Bay here in Khalifa, Southwest.
Okay, brother.
I just wanted to ask you a question. As far as living in the contract, I have a driver's license, the state of California. Well, I have their driver's license, excuse me. But when I sign that contract, I signed it with the UCC codes, the 308 and the 207. Now,
okay,
would that, being in court, would that give me some type of barrier also? Because
no.
I've never seen it on anybody else's driver's license, but I put it on mine with my signature.
That don't mean nothing.
That don't mean nothing, okay.
No, that don't mean that. You first of all, if you could understand one thing, you're dealing with, and I ain't said this in a long time, but you're dealing with criminals.
Okay.
That's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with criminals. So
yes, sir.
Even if you, we have to understand that even if we had everything just right, and these people that we've listened to already have told you the same thing, even if we had all the documents, we got them dead to the right. There ain't no way out. We got them. If you don't know how, fend what you got.
Mm.
You ain't got nothing.
Mm.
Even if I ask you a question, how many rights you got? You say, well, in this case, I got at least 15 rights. Well, how many of them can you defend? Well, I don't know how to defend them. Well, you ain't got no rights.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. See, okay. There's no magic. See, we looking for a magic bullet. We looking for something that we can put somewhere and then stand back and wait on a criminal to say, oh, Lord, I'm a criminal like that.
I understand. Well, see, I do understand the Supreme Court case, Chicago versus Motor Coach, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, we're able to travel, you know, unmolested and, you know, in our automobiles. You know, I don't call it a vehicle. You know, I know they were wizards. I'm just trying to figure out how many more walls do I have to put up. But since they're criminals, I understand. No matter what wall I put up, I'm going to have to defend it regardless.
There you go.
And I'm
you got all the Supreme Court done rule over and over and over in several cases on the same thing. But can you defend these cases? Do you know when to object? Do you know when they're trying to dodge that right hook? Do you know when they're trying to dodge that uppercut? Do you know what to do on each one of them?
What I noticed is that they try to use every tool that they can to get you inside of their jurisdiction first
mm-hmm.
so that they can do all of this stuff to you. So that allows them the okay. Is that true or not?
The Green Frog that told you what they do. See these people, if we understand how they operate, first of all, let's get this first thing understood. First of all, there's only one real court inside the United States. That's the International Court of Trade. What we think is law. The law don't show up until you get there. The law don't function until you make it functional. Okay? What they're calling judges, these are administrative employees. And the building that you're in is not a courthouse. This is an administrative building. They're operating under a military tribunal. It cannot try you on the military tribunal unless you let them get away with it. So what we're trying to do is stop the get away with it program by learning what they use and what they do and how they do it and how to stop them. What we got. Any documents you file anywhere, make sure that you're able to back it up. Somebody could tell me in the fifth grade that, man, you the best speller out of all the people who could spell in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the spelling bee, I'm going to have to go for what I know. I can't walk up to the podium and say, look, I ain't got to spell nothing because everybody in this city done told me I'm the best speller out of everybody. So I ain't got to prove nothing to y'all. Well, that's all right. Move on to the side. Let me get this other guy out here and let him spell and get him the red blue ribbon. You know?
I get it.
You know,
I get it, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all
right,
I'm
let me go to the next one.
Still in the gym. Right. I got my gloves on. I'm still training. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right.
It's long.
All right. 850. 850.
There's one more.
Hey, man. Come on in.
Okay. I got a question.
What you got?
You know, when you go to court and and you say, okay, this is for the record, let the record show, right? If you don't say that, is it still on record? Pull it up on a transcript, because I had a magistrate up here in Panama City when I went to court about a year ago over, you know, over the driving my license suspended issue.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he was the law and not the Constitution.
Okay.
Okay. But my question is, if we don't state that this is for the record and let the record show, is it on record or does it carry any weight?
Well, that's why I'm telling you to ask for a copy of the transcripts. And remember what you say for the record. And you want to make sure that you announce this to the courthouse so that it will be perfectly clear of every point, every straight hand jab you done throw, every left hook you done throw, every uppercut you done throw, everything is on the record.
Right, but just for clarification, everything is going to be on the record.
It's supposed to be on the record, but what I'm telling you, see, I don't trust criminals.
Right.
If I'm putting it on the record and stuff, give me a copy of the transcript, and so I can see and have evidence of everything I said, every objection I made, every right hook I threw, and what you did. And if I got this evidence, and I go over the evidence, I look at it, and I see where they got blank spaces on where I didn't say for the record, and my testimony is not there on that record, now we got a problem with the stenographer. But we can't get excited because we're dealing with what?
Dealing with criminals.
There you go. So we don't trust nothing, but we want to do everything we're supposed to do. We need a little, you know, can we get that, get a copy of that? And so we can take a look at it so that if there's a problem, we can see where you outright just broke the law, evaded the question, obstruction of justice and all that. And then we can come back and we can file some lawsuits on these points here alone. We get the prosecutor turning up out of the bed, catch him before he go out of town and say, well, look, you got to turn around and pull that Cadillac back up in the driveway, but we got to go back and the fight ain't over. We got to... You got to be, you know, you got to get these people, man. But the thing is, once you become savvy enough in dealing with them, and they know that you know when they see you, I know a guy, this guy, you know, he done beat him up so bad to he went, a friend of his went down there, and the friend asked him, would you please go down there with me? He said, okay, I'll go with you. He went down there, and they throw him out the courtroom. They don't care what they said he did or who brought charges against him, whatever. But when he come up in that courtroom and the judge find out of him, he like, Mena, get out of the building. Don't come back here no more.
Right.
And then the judge go and tell the police officer, don't bring him back down here no more, because he be carrying up to sleep. Down here. Leave him alone. Just let him go. If he's breaking the law, act like you don't see it. And so he come down there, and the judge called the guy's name. The guy got up there, and he said, oh, Your Honor, he said, do you have an attorney? He said, yes, I do. And Maynard jumped up. And the judge said, Maynard? He said, that's you? He said, yes, sir. He said, both of y'all, get out of here. Get out of the business.
I'm going to ask you that question right now.
Okay, bro.
For your time. Right.
You're welcome. Anybody else? I got a question. Go ahead, raise your hand. We're going to go to the next phase here now and deal with some more of this. And now we're going to deal specifically with them traffic tickets. Okay? I got to deal with this thing, man.
Hi, I'm Mark Stevens, author of Adventures in Legaland and host of the No Stay Project, the only show on the air dedicated to bringing about a voluntary society. You can hear that every Saturday afternoon from 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time and 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time on We the People Radio Network. That's WTPRN.com. Again, that's WTPRN.com. What I want to talk about today, civil traffic tickets, beating civil traffic tickets, getting them kicked out. One thing I want to point out, though, is all traffic courts, it doesn't matter who or what, you know, who's running them, they're all scams. It has nothing to do about protection, has nothing to do about justice. It's about separating you from your money. That's all they're there to do. And you'll find that out if you are unfortunate enough to have to go there. You see, most people, their interaction with government is through traffic tickets. We all know somebody who's got a traffic ticket. Nobody wants to get it. And what they do is they set the fine low enough so that you'll just pay it. They go, oh, this isn't worth my time. I'm not going to take time off from work. It's only a couple $100. I'll just pay it. That's a mind game. They're doing this on purpose. It's part of the whole advertising and public relations of these comment called traffic courts. They want you to just pay it because if more people fought it, the whole system would collapse. Either that or before it collapsed, what they would do is they would keep lowering the fines. And they would keep lowering the fines until they got that happy medium to where people would just pay it, which is, of course, what they want. I mean, why go through the whole charade of a trial if you could just have people send the money in? I wouldn't just pay it because as I'm going to go through here, and it's not some conspiracy theory crap, okay, then you can verify all this. You'll see that no traffic ticket has any validity whatsoever. They're just part of a scam. So it doesn't matter what they're actually accusing me of, the ticket has no validity whatsoever, even under their little codes. So what I talk about a lot is the issue of standing, and this is just one of many ways of showing that a traffic ticket has no validity, but it's a big one. It's a very important one. If I can show that the ticket, that the plaintiff has no standing to complain against me, well, then the court has no subject matter jurisdiction, and the case has to be thrown out. So it doesn't matter what I'm being actually accused of if they can't show standing. So this is why I press this issue so much. It's a very big issue. Again, it's only one of many issues that show that traffic tickets are just part of a larger scam, and that they have no validity whatsoever. So one of the things I want to point out, that if you learn anything from the video, is that a ticket, is not synonymous with a cause of action. See, they want you to believe that a cause of action and a ticket are exactly the same thing because then they've already won. They've got you here. Because, well, you know, most people just assume, well, there's a valid cause of action here. I'll just pay it. Or it's not worth my time. I pay it. But, boy, you open up a whole can of worms now when you start questioning whether the complaint, presents a valid cause of action. And a cause of action is a very specific thing, legally. In fact, any attorney will tell you that. They don't want you to discuss that. The one thing that judges and prosecutors and especially the police, they don't want you talking about cause of action or standing. And they'll even let you think that doesn't even apply. We'll show you that it does. So before we get into the issue of standing, to determine how somebody gets standing in an American court, you have to know what the court is for. I mean, why do we have courts? Why do we have government? Now, I know this is all public relations, but this just goes to show that the ticket has no validity, even under their little code. You find the purpose of government in the Declaration of Independence in most state constitutions. In Arizona, for example, it's Article 2, Section 2, and it states that governments are established to protect and maintain individual rights. Okay, now stop laughing. It says that governments are established to protect and maintain individual rights. So this is why we have the government. Now, we know courts are part of the government, so the purpose of the court is to protect and maintain individual rights, of course. So what is the court's jurisdiction? Well, the court's jurisdiction is limited, of course, to its purpose. The purpose is to protect and maintain individual rights, so the jurisdiction of any court is going to be limited to the protection and maintenance of individual rights. That's basic common sense. So then for a plaintiff to have standing in that same court, in an American court, the plaintiff has to allege the violation of a legal right because the court's jurisdiction is based on protecting and maintaining individual rights. So to have standing, they have to allege that. And you can go into any number of court cases. They're consistent, believe it or not, with this. Of course, they don't like to hear this in a traffic court. Raines versus Byrd. Standing is a necessary component of subject matter jurisdiction. Well, you have to have subject matter jurisdiction even in a traffic case. It states that standing is perhaps the most important of the jurisdictional doctrines. Standing represents a jurisdictional requirement which remains open to review at all stages of litigation. And then the Supreme Court of the United States, again, Allen v. Wright, this is where you get into the elements of standing. The requirement of standing, however, has a core component derived directly from the Constitution. A plaintiff must allege personal injury fairly traceable to the defendant's allegedly unlawful conduct and likely to be redressed by the requested relief. So you have to have the injury, which is the invasion of a legal right. So we know that they're claiming that it's a civil traffic ticket. Let's say I didn't have a seatbelt on and they filed a civil action against me. Well, did they allege the violation of a legal right? Is there any injury? They must allege personal injury. Well, was the police officer alleging personal injury? Does the prosecutor allege personal injury of the so-called plaintiff? No. So now if the courts, now this is subject matter jurisdiction, so for a plaintiff to have standing, they have to allege the violation of a legal right. Once they do that, then the court can have subject matter jurisdiction. But here we see there is no violation of legal right, so there couldn't be any subject matter jurisdiction because the court is limited, and the purpose of the court is to what? That's right, to protect and maintain individual rights. So you see right off the bat, no driver's license or no seatbelt or or even speeding. Not that I'm advocating people traveling on a speed that's not reasonable or prudent, but 5, 10, 12 miles an hour over the speed limit probably isn't really endangering anybody. So you see that there's no validity whatsoever to any of those tickets. And that's on just this one issue alone. And if you think that this isn't a serious issue, that the government attorneys don't take this seriously, you can just look at a recent case where the NSA was sued by, I believe it was the ACLU. And that was the main issue that they raised, that they hadn't shown standing. They couldn't show a personal injury. Well, that applies. Well, okay. Well, standing applies across the board, even to civil traffic cases, because we know that the government was established to what? Protect and maintain individual rights. So that's what the jurisdiction is limited to. So there is a very, it's been a very effective way, and it shows you that no traffic ticket has any validity whatsoever. So in the next video, what we'll discuss is how to impeach a witness, which is typically in a traffic case, you only have one witness, it's the police officer. And I can go through how you can impeach him by asking only two questions. Some cases, you ask him even one question, and the judge would be more than happy to say he's incompetent to testify. But that's in the next video. Until then, I'm Mark Stevens. Go to my website. It's Adventures in... Hi, I'm Mark Stevens, author of Adventures in Legaland, and this is part two of Beating Civil Traffic Tickets. And what I'm going to discuss today is how to impeach a witness, a government witness, by asking only two questions. And typically when you get a traffic ticket, the only witness against you is a police officer. It's just basically your word against his. And as the accuser, see, a lot of people may say, well, these questions aren't appropriate for the police officer. Well, that's just going in and showing that the officer's not competent to testify. He wrote the ticket. He's supposed to be able to answer questions and supposed to have a right to confront your accuser and demand the nature and cause of the charges and proceedings. And you're supposed to be able to question a police officer or any witness on prior testimony, whether it's written or oral. And what he puts on the ticket is written testimony. He's making an allegation against you and supposed to have every right to confront him and question him on it. They don't like you to ask questions because, as you'll see, it's very easy to show that the officer has no idea what he's talking about. They don't teach him these things, and even if he could answer the two questions, it doesn't help him. It just digs a deeper hole for them. And to show that, I want to just restate from the last video why you have government, because it forms the basis of the questions. And the public relations is, and we know this is all bull, we know this isn't true, but it's just propaganda, is that the government was created to protect and maintain individual rights. And you can find that in several state constitutions and the Declaration of Independence. So from there, we know that the jurisdiction of the court is, of course, limited to protecting and maintaining individual rights. Therefore, for there to be a case or controversy, as the courts have consistently held, there has to be the violation of someone's rights and damage. So the police officer, like everyone else, is required to file a valid cause of action, because without a valid cause of action, there is no standing and the court acquires no subject matter jurisdiction and cannot proceed against you, or anyone for that matter. So the question is to have him impeached, and what I mean by impeach is just to show that he's legally disqualified from testifying, that his testimony is inadmissible against me, you know, just whoever happens to be the defendant in that case. It doesn't mean he's removed from office, though that would be really good. That would be spectacular. However, that's not what it means. It just means he's not qualified to testify, and legally the judge has no discretion to accept his testimony, so it's got to be thrown out, and including his prior testimony, which would be the ticket. So the two questions are this. I like to give the police officer a copy of the ticket. I'll hand him a copy and ask him, did you file a valid cause of action against me? Now, of course, he's going to have to say yes, and they usually allow him to answer that question because it's pretty obvious. If he doesn't have a valid cause of action, there's no standing, and the court has no subject matter jurisdiction, and the case has to be thrown out because the court is established to protect and maintain individual rights. So the second question, the follow-up, that will cause usually both attorneys representing the police officer to jump out of their chairs. And the question is, how many elements are in a valid cause of action? And usually his attorneys will jump out of the chair yelling, objection, calls for a legal conclusion, the witness is incompetent to testify. Now, he could say he's unable to testify. They'll say it's outside the scope of his expertise. It means the same thing. He is not qualified to testify to those matters. But they allowed him to answer the first question. That's okay, because it helps their case. But once you ask him to explain what he said, now they've got a problem with it. What they don't understand is that the judge will always sustain the objection, which is exactly what I'm looking for, which means the witness is incapable or unable or incompetent to testify, which now requires the judge to strike all the testimony. And it's that simple. Doesn't mean the case is going to get thrown out, because again, traffic courts are scams ran by criminals. Yeah, they wear robes, they wear suits, but they're criminals nonetheless. But it's just that simple to be able to impeach a government witness.
Okay, Moses, we back. Now, did y'all get that? Now, what I would like to recommend you to do is listen to this over and over and go over again until you get it down. Write it down. So if you get up in there, test fire it. Because I'm discovering, and the more I talk to people, and I talk to people all day long from all over the United States, Germany, Afghanistan, the Virgin Islands, and everywhere, and I'm finding out that what I've come to understand and realize about what's going on, you got magistrates, employees inside these administrative buildings that don't know jack about the law. And you certainly got prosecutors and attorneys who they definitely did not teach them nothing about law. They taught them courtroom procedure. So the law don't show up until you get there. And if you do it right, then you can have some success. Just always make sure that you are ready for what's next. We don't want to just learn on one little thing, go in there and fire it, and don't know what to do next. No. You want to have your whole game plan down so you can work this thing to the point when the next time something else come up about you or your name come up, they can tell everybody, well, look, send him an apology, because he ain't finna do this to me no more. leave him alone. Okay, now we're coming on down into Tampa, Florida. Let's go to Tampa, Florida now, okay? Oh, yeah.
Mark Stevens, it is April 20th. It is 4:20, so we're going to have to definitely talk about, I know Calvin has just sent me a message about maybe talking about the drug war being a scam, and we can talk about that today. Oh, it sounds like the helicopters, we're starting the show, so that's about right. But I'm Mark Stevens. Welcome to the April 20th, the 4:20 edition of the No State Project. I'm glad to be here with you. Got a lot of stuff to get to. I'm going to get the video. I know it's like the new book, but it's not going to take nearly as long to get the video posted. I do have the video for what happened in Tempe this week, and it will be available at markstevens.net. We also have a call of shame that we're going to get posted, a Canadian one. I believe it's Canadian. We'll get that posted later, and again, after the show, I'll have the what happened in Tempe. We'll be taking calls, not for this segment, but I know we're already loaded up with calls. Be patient. I'm going to try to get an introduction kind of video to what happened in Tempe. So I want to give an update to what happened in Tempe for those following. I spoke a couple of weeks ago, confronted the Tempe City Council with the question, what empirical proof do you have that your codes apply to me or anyone else and that you have jurisdiction over us? And, of course, they're not able to answer. There is no answer, no responsive answer. There is no facts. But they could be honest and they could just say there is no evidence. There isn't. So what they did was they pawned it off on the city attorney. And let's see where – there she is. There's a woman named Judith Bowman up from Long Island. Judith Bowman, she's the interim Tempe City attorney, and so they said that I would be able to speak in depth with Ms. Bowman. So we set up an initial, she did respond to an email that I had sent. She did set up an appointment for last week, which was, and I mentioned this on the show last week with Alex Knight. There, that show, you can get that show there. She blew it off. Blew it off, never contacted me, didn't call me, didn't say a word, didn't return my emails, didn't return my calls, had no intention of resetting it. So last Friday I did give a call, spoke to a secretary, and we did get it reset for this past Wednesday. I guess that was the 17th, April 17th. So she would not do it over the phone. I guess she was worried that I was going to record it and post it on the call of shame, but I gave my word I wasn't going to do that. She refused. She absolutely would not do it. I had to do it in person, and she was not going to permit any kind of recording whatsoever. So I went with Dan from the chat, who's gone and been a media rep for a number of people. Appreciate that. So we get there, and she's got a law school student, third-year law school student named Anthony, who's attending. So we're sitting in a conference room. And she's more interested in my background than answering the questions. I imagine that if someone from ABC News, who's considered a real journalist, she wouldn't be asking about what their background is, just what are your questions that you have. But for me, she wants to know my background, where I'm going with everything. It's very simple. I want to know what evidence you have, empirical proof that you have, that the Tempe Code applies to me or anyone else, and if there's jurisdiction, because this is a pretty serious issue. The tens of millions of dollars that they bring in are based on their code and sending swarms of police officers out to bring people into the corrupt court to then extract the money. She absolutely refuses. Like I said to the city council on Thursday night, the next night, the only straight answer you can get from this woman right here, Judith Bowman, only straight answer I could really get from this woman was she would absolutely not discuss the evidence that she relies on to prove that the code she enforces every day applies to me or anyone else. She would not do that. And we were scheduled from 2 to 2:30. She got up at about a little after 2, 2:10. She got up and started walking away. So I had to ask her, well, wait a minute, one other question before you just rudely walk away. She wasn't even going to say goodbye. She just got up and walked out. So I stop her, and I said, no, I have another question. And I said, look, are you just willfully withholding evidence? Or you know you have no evidence, and you just can't wait to get the heck out of here as fast as you can? Well, needless to say, she did not want to answer that particular question either. So I told her what I wanted to do was I wanted to submit it to her entire prosecuting staff. So we've got the entire city council who, after weeks, cannot give a responsive answer to what evidence they have that their code applies. And now we have the city attorney who said that I would be able to speak to her in depth and she would be able to answer my question. She refused also. So I wanted to submit it to her entire staff. She did not like the idea. I asked her for the contact information for her entire prosecuting staff. I'm just interested in the prosecutors. I don't care about the about attorneys that are not actually bringing people into court under the impression that the law applies to them. She didn't want to do that. She said, I go to the media rep, that the contact information for the media rep was on the website. I couldn't find it. I called, spoke. Someone at her office couldn't find it on the website. Here it is. It's tempe.gov. Couldn't find it. So what I was stuck doing was sending a fax. So what we'll do is we'll go down over here, and I'm looking at, this is the fax that I sent. I got the little nice icon there. It try to look sort of professional. And I just lay it out for the entire prosecuting staff. I'm a radio show host and investigative journalist. I'll give you a little moment to laugh at that. I investigate mainly government corruption. I've asked your city council several times for empirical evidence the laws and Tempe Code apply to me and others and have not gotten a responsive answer. I spoke to your boss, Ms. Bauman, on April 17th, and she refuses to discuss the matter. If there was evidence, it would have been provided weeks ago. So I'm putting the question to the prosecutors in this office. Please make sure a copy gets to each prosecutor. And here's the question nobody can give me an answer to. It's such a simple question, at least to me, either you have the evidence or you don't. But it's, what empirical evidence do you rely on proving the laws apply to me and others? Right? You got millions and millions of dollars at stake here. Where's your evidence? Since you accuse people of violating your laws every day, including me a few times, then you must have evidence the laws apply. And then I give my contact information. Not too confident that they are going to, I'm not too confident that they are going to be responsive to me. I think we'll get the same thing. What Ms. Bauman did was, because she wanted a little of my background, and I do regret saying that I did give her a little bit where I was coming from, where I was going with this question. Where I'm going with the question is just proving that you guys have no evidence. You're a gang of killers, thieves, and liars, and you're running a mafia-type racket. Plain and simple. Without the evidence that your code applies, you're no different than any other gang of criminals. So I had told her, based on my investigation, I've done this show for a number of years now. I have spoken to hundreds and hundreds of prosecutors and judges, lawyers, tax agents, police officers. I've spoken to hundreds of politicians and we'll just say bureaucrats. And based on that, none of them have been able to produce one shred of empirical proof that the code, the Constitution, their codes apply. And it doesn't matter. I told her, I've done this with bureaucrats and prosecutors in Australia. I've got the evidence on the website. I've done it in England, where I asked John Scott, what evidence do you have that the Acts of Parliament apply to my client? And I have absolutely no idea. So based on my investigation, there's no evidence these codes apply. So she tried to use that as, this is what lawyers do to avoid the question. You don't have any evidence, Ms. Bauman, so you try to deflect the attention. You don't answer the question directly. And this is what she did. She made up this excuse that because my mind was made up that there was no evidence, she was going to refuse to answer the question. Now take a moment to digest the stupidity of such a statement. Your mind, Mark, is made up that there's no evidence, so I'm not going to answer your question and present my evidence. I go there dressed. I think I'm a professional. And this is what I get. But what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be posting the video of me confronting the Tempe City Council again. It's about 7 minutes long, and you're going to love this. They actually admit that there, basically no evidence. It's because they said so. We'll be back here on the No State Project in just a moment. Don't go away.
Good evening. Please state your name and place of residence.
Good evening. Mark Stevens with Mesa. I'm just going to call it a residence, though. I want to get straight to the point. Last time...
Okay, this part here is too low for us to get up here on the broadcast, but it was quite amazing. I watched the whole show, and it goes back to what I had told you earlier. You see, what we have here inside the United States is we're under the impression that the politicians that we are putting into office are working on our behalf some kind of way. But you will discover that the first law of nature applies to everybody, including the politicians. What they're doing is they're getting you to vote for them, and they get in the office. And when they get in the office, they, well, you know, because they in the first place, you have to ask yourself a question. What? Why are you running for office? Well, I'm running for office because this particular position pays X amount of dollars plus all these other fringe benefits and all this right here. But we're under the impression that if we got these politicians in office and all they got to do is use certain kind of words and stuff to let us, lead us, to keep the scam going, to lead us to believe that they're actually doing something. When you hear, if you pay attention, they'll say, okay, our budget, we're trying to deal with our budget and we're going to have to raise taxes and all this right here. Okay, well, if that's the case, what you, your city, your county was given $30 million prior to the election. What happened to the money? The city still looked the same. We don't, the only thing that we see that is really increased and benefited is other large corporations building buildings and all of this stuff here. And we're supposed to be happy and excited about the fact that we put you in office to line the pockets of the rich and the super rich while we still remain poor. That's like me getting excited about the Cadillac industry coming out with a brand new super Cadillac that's spectacular, but without even realizing, not nail dime out of none of it went into my pocket. None of it. And that's going on all across the United States. Everywhere you go is the same old thing. These people, well, these people, they are living exorbitant lifestyles. But you voted them in the office, and you are under the impression that they're supposed to be trying to do something to you. The only thing that they're going to do is just enough to keep you from catching on to the scam and creating an uprising and shooting them for robbing you. That's all they're going to do. They've been doing it for what? 75 years now. After a while, we have the elections come up. And for the presidency of the United States, and then when they'll do the media to get in and start broadcasting them, and then, well, who you thinking of win? And bipartisan over here, and then he's too conservative over there. It's, I don't want to cuss. It's, watch them. It's all about the money. It's all about the Benjamins. And all these people get paid. We run into the poll. We ride around. We got stickers on our cars. And I voted for so-and-so, and we're voting for such-and-such a district. And all it is, and by the time the next election come around, you go outside your house and look around. The district looked the same way it looked before you stood out in the rain at the voting booth. It's all about the dollars. What these people are doing is they're making a living, and y'all excuse me, off of the stupidity of the masses, the insanity of the masses. They got it. I mean, they have had the most outstanding scam in recorded our ancient story, our history, going for the longest. They got the Federal Reserve printing our cash without no gold back, just printing out thin air, and just lining these people's pockets. They operating off cash, credit. They ain't paying no taxes. They got the LLCs set up, the trust up, all this. But they got to lead you to believe that we're going to have to raise taxes because our budget, we got to lay off officers, and we got to, man, this is amazing, the farce. And then when you corner them, they use legalese on you. They use all kind of terminologies. They pass the book, come out with the city attorney, and you're going to have to talk to him, and all this, and no. We want to talk to you. We ain't interested in the budget. I need to know about the CAFA. Tell me about the CAFA. Show me Show me the records of what you actually done with the money. We know how much came in. Show me point by point. We want an audit on the books for the county. Now we got a very serious problem going on, because you're talking about shining a real bright light on a conspiracy and citywide, which will lead to statewide corruption. All you got to do, and to figure this out, all you got to do is just ask you a question. Ask yourself a question. When they had the mortgage crisis and collapse, how many people went to jail? Nobody. That common sense ought to tell you right there that we have an American scam, a national Ponzi scheme going on. And then what they'll do is they'll go get one of the crime family bosses and lock him up in prison because he's a criminal. But what we fail to realize, the one that locked him up is a bigger criminal than he is. They're trying to keep him from telling on them. That's what that's about. That's what happened to Noriega. And Noriega let it slip out. I don't know if some of y'all may not remember Manuel Noriega, but Manuel Noriega, he said it, they recorded it on the camera, played it on the news broadcast. He said, I'm going to tell on everybody. After a while, you heard nothing there from Noriega. They got Noriega. They done put Noriega somewhere where you will never be heard or seen or heard. We're going to remove you from the minds of the people. You are not going to tell on the President of the United States. You are not going to tell the truth about the FBI and Pablo Escobar. You are not going to tell, call the names of all the politicians and senators and congressmen that got paid as a result of the drug situation. You are not going to tell what? The truth. You discover in this world that the world has only one consistent treatment for its would-be saviors, and that is to crucify them.
Greetings, family. We are about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda, and that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agricultural systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
All right, Moses, we're back. Now, anybody got a question? We got 11 minutes to go. Go ahead and raise your hand. Open up the lines. Keep in mind that tomorrow night we'll have our wealth-building class for those of you who want to make some money online. I would love to have some people on my network, and I certainly appreciate all the brothers and sisters that have joined my network and are well on the way. We got brothers and sisters that's building their websites based on the teaching that we have taught them. They are following the techniques that we're giving them. I run into them all over the Internet. They're rolling with this thing. It is amazing, and I'm so proud of you all for doing what you have to do and getting in a position to make the money and to have a second income for yourself. Okay, that's fantastic, because we got the job situation going on. We got the Internal Revenue bearing down on us. The system is designed to keep us impoverished and to keep us away from becoming rich. And we should have figured out by now that something is wrong. Now, they'll throw a bone every once in a while. You might, they you know, they say, well, you know, the winning ticket was gotten down in Florida. Well, and they put it on the news, but I'm like, how do I know you didn't tell this guy you going to pay him $10,000 to act like he got the ticket and get on the news? That's untrustworthy. Because, I mean, I can't see no criminal doing nothing good. I can't see no criminal all of a sudden becoming holy and righteous. I can't see it. I just can't see it. It just don't come this way. I can't see it.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. It's real simple. First you get the power, then you get the money as a result of having the power, and as a result of having the two, now you're officially ready for the girl. Most of us do not understand inside the United States the reason why we as people of African descent are in the condition that we are in is because we have no businesses, we have no power, we have no wealth. All the other countries that are here, if you look at the Koreans, the Japanese, the Chinese, the nail, the industry, the hair industry, and so on and so forth, you don't see these people filling the prisons. Why? Because these people have functioning businesses. Get your own business. Go to newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link to Tahaka Powernomics Network. And when you do, call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have the smokiness business going right now, which will generate the capital and set up the network for you to accumulate the wealth you need, and that way you can take back your communities, take your neighborhoods, and transform them into thriving communities. Call me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Examine that page. Just check out everything on the page. Check out the links. Check out the video. Call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
One more time, Morris. January, between the hours of 6 and 9, we will be looking for vendors to come down here to the Morris Summit. If you are a vendor, if you have books to sell, if you have oils or whatever it is, your little business, you bring on down here. We ask you to go to summitofthemorris.com. Do your registration. We ask you for a donation of $50, a vendor's fee, so that you can get down here and set up, and you'll be able to display your wares down here. There'll be a ton of people here. So come on down January the 10th. That's from the hours of 6 to 9, you'll be able to do that. And we're looking forward to meeting you down here at the Morris Summit, okay? I'm going to do my best to deep fry some fresh fish for y'all down here. So y'all come on down here and let us show you some of this good Florida hospitality, okay? Moses, we're winding down. We're getting down to the bottom of this thing. And my biggest hope is that you have gotten something out of the broadcast that we have presented here for you this evening. Keep in mind that tomorrow night we're going to host our wealth-building class. Don't miss that. If you thought about having your own business, if you want to have your own business, if someone has invited you to Dallas's broadcast, it behooves you to dial in to the conference call. Now, this is not going to be on Morris Talk Live 100. You're going to have to use your phone and make sure you got your computer up, make sure you got your paper and pencil ready so that you can take notes on this thing so that we can get you paid. My job is to get the people on my team paid and the people that they bring in paid. that by giving you the tools of production and what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and everything else. You dial the number 712-32-3100. Access code 865074. That's 712-432-3100. Access code 865074. I thank you all for being here, and I hope you got something out of this broadcast. I have been your host, Tahaka Manaelbe, and until the next broadcast, well, until tomorrow night, you all have a good evening, okay? You might